Hey, Drew, can you lead us in? Because Fred might drop it.
Let's do the damn thing.
Oh, you know what time it is. It's time to take it to the burn land. It's about to go down. Hope you're all ready.
Let's go.
Come and roll with me to the burn land. Friends got to giving you the word, man. Any other BS is absurd, man. Sports talk and they give it to you firsthand. They can talk Terps, they can talk O's. Yeah, they both lit, that's how it goes. Baltimore squad, Ravens and Poe. Better tune in, here gonna show. Burnland, Burnland, Burnland. BS, Burnland, Burnland, Burnland. BS.
It's all about that BS, baby.
Yes, sir.
What's up, peeps?
I got it.
you did it perfectly. Fred dropped the ball in the intro a little slow, but we'll get into that a little bit later.
Hey, Fred, why don't you take your Scott's glasses off there, Scott?
Well, we can't change cameras, but I'll show you now. I got raccoon eyes like hell. It's crazy. So we're just going to, rather than distract you all with that, we'll leave these on and let that be the distraction.
Look, you guys could just be like, ha-ha, well, at least we went to the game, Drew. Yeah,
how was the game, Drew?
I was good on the radio for...
You can even watch it?
...the second or third inning. No, I got to get with you later about that VPN stuff. You got to school me.
Fred figured it out. He got
to school
it.
Me on it.
I did. Had to pay for it.
Yeah, you got to pay for it. It is, but it's definitely worth it. So, guys, we got a great show for you guys tonight. Fred over in the producer chair tonight. We got James over on the couch. We got Ryan at home doing his taxes.
Doing taxes.
And we got Ray Charles sitting in for Scott.
Yeah, exactly. I'm blind as hell. I can still catch a ball. Anyway.
Catcher on catcher crimes.
Set myself up for that one.
Yeah, look, hey, we got a lot to get into. The Ravens this past week, they bring back a couple of familiar faces. A lot of people surprised, especially so close to the draft and the names that they're bringing back. But we're just a little over 2 weeks away from the NFL draft, so a lot to kind of dive into and what some of these signings actually mean.
Yeah, and of course, Orioles baseball's back over the weekend. And this week, so they opened the season in a rough way on the road, of course, against those Rays. But turn it around, get that home opener. It's always good to get a win there. And plenty down on the farm over the weekend,
too. Yeah, a lot going on down on the farm. And in this week's rundown, we're talking shit shows in D.C., the horrible reaction to a tragic death, and USFL advances football technology that I question how the NFL has not done it yet. All this and more. But
it's a matter of time before they steal it.
Why don't you give us a shout-out to our sponsors?
Yeah, sponsor time. Let's go.
What?
What?
Give me a hell yeah.
Hell yeah. All right. Man, I feel like I don't know where all this energy is coming from. All right. I remember our team over at MD Crash. At this point, I think we should all know by now. We've been telling you about it for 2 years. Well, now they've expanded for more lawyers, handling a much broader spectrum of cases now. Still handling all your auto accidents and injuries at work, of course. But now the team at Bowers, Hassan, and Herndon can help you with your family law issues, too, like divorce. Yay! To custody and child support, et cetera, even some criminal cases. You know, the errant traffic ticket. Maybe murder. Who knows anymore? You can now call or text 667-220-6500 anytime for any of your needs. So say that number now. Update that Maryland Crash number. Not Maryland Crash. Just put like BH and H and try to figure it out later on. That number again, 667-220-6500. Call or text anytime to get the team of Bowers, Hassan, and Herndon on your case.
All righty. Well, we led off, obviously, with a little bit of poke in front at Fred, and we're just going to keep it going. because, Fred, if you can put this on, I'm going to put it on you for you.
All right.
I got a little surprise for you.
Oh, God.
Okay.
Here we go. Is there a video of this?
I need you to be prepared, okay?
Oh, no. I'm ready.
It's coming to you, okay?
Oh, I got it. Two hands.
Oh, shit.
Butterfingers. Wait.
It's candy. I'm fat. Of course I'm going to catch it. Two in a row.
It makes up for the Butterfingers you have.
Austin Hayes didn't throw it to me. If it's Austin Hayes throwing it to me, I'm not going to catch it.
Oh, man.
No excuses, fellas. I just dropped it. Ball hit me in the palm. This is now the second year in a row. I muffed it. I felt bad, man. I was trying to catch the ball for a little kid at his first Orioles game that was down there. He had been trying to
get Austin. There was a sign.
Listen, he had been trying to get Austin's attention for four straight innings, and Austin really wasn't hearing it. Finally, he sees the big guy standing there. I'm going to throw it to him. He'll catch it easy. Boom, right off the hand. Yep. It rolls down to another dad with a little kid. He picked it up and gave it to his kid. I felt guilty for about the rest of that game.
And I was and six rows over. Six rows over just watching. I was like, this guy.
It was pretty bad. We got to get the story out there, so have a little bit of fun with Fred Polk at him. But feel free in the chat room. He is in the chat room tonight. Man. He'll be throwing our questions our way. And be sure to give him some shit while you're doing it. We appreciate it. the Ravens, Flock Talk this week. Some news coming out that we had heard from EDC last week. Saying that, you know, there was a lot going on. He had a lot to be excited about, and that things would be coming out in the next coming weeks. Well, this past week, almost immediately, we saw two signings here.
Yeah.
One of them
doesn't shock me, and I guess, sorry, yeah, the first one we're going to talk about, not shocking, but I guess I didn't really see it coming.
I didn't necessarily see it coming, but so the one that you're talking about is us re-signing Josh Bynes this week. He gets a one-year deal. We still don't hear any details yet about the money. I haven't heard anything put out about that. I even looked it up on SportTrack today. Last year, he was on a one-year, $1.075 million deal. He did play in 14 games last year, had 76 tackles, 6 tackles for a loss, 2 sacks, and 4 pass deflections. I think it's very easy to say here to me.
They underpaid.
Well, I think it's over a $2 million contract. With the numbers that he's putting up there, the impact that he made, you played 14 games. I think there's something there. It's going to be over $2 million. How much over, I don't know. I don't think it's going to be crazy over, but I think it will be over $2 million. Do you have any thoughts on it? Or
I mean, anything that's like about that, like that deal right there, you said like 1.2 to – I don't know if – I'm too okay with it. I guess it doesn't. Sometimes it doesn't really matter. I think 2 million sounds a little bit bigger in my head than like say.
Well, compared to the 1.075
like,
last year.
I think that's what I'm saying. Like I think it feels a little too high, but I guess
let me throw this
into
perspective. He was with 3 other teams prior to that 1 year contract we just gave him.
Yeah.
So it was kind of that was kind of a prove me type deal.
Yeah.
Now they said, okay, you did better. We'll re-sign you. Let's prove it again.
Yeah.
Right? That type of situation. Fred, what is your take on this deal?
So this whole thing, it's not the sexy move that everybody wanted to hear. It's not the big off-season addition, right? This was a move of necessity. It was a position that they absolutely have a need for. And honestly, he came in last year and immediately was the best tackler on the team and made an immediate impact on this defense. Is he the big name, like I said, that everybody wants out there? No, but this was a necessary move. There's been talks about Malik Harrison potentially moving outside, which we're going to talk a little bit about later, because obviously they're shorthanded on pass rushers, and he hasn't really worked out very well in the middle. So again, from a depth perspective, from a leadership perspective, $2 million is next to nothing financially. So I think this is a
Do you think that's if it is coming in, do you think it is over $2 million, under $2 million, around $2
million? I think $2 million is a sweet spot. It might be somewhere around $2.3, $2.5 million at the cap, I think, at the top end.
Maybe with some incentive in there somewhere.
Right, some incentive laden deal, but he's worth his weight in gold.
He's not getting a one-year $5 million deal. People don't need to be worrying about the cap space going down or anything.
They're
going
to have to rework some contracts, definitely, especially after this next deal you're going to talk about as well.
Yeah, this next deal, this is the bigger news with re-signing Calais Campbell. Gets a 2-year, $12.5 million deal with $6 million guaranteed. It also has incentives for $500,000 each for playing time of 60%, 70%, 5 sacks, and 8 sacks. So if he were to hit 70% playing time and 8 sacks, that is an extra $2 million in his pocket. So there's a $2 million incentive here. This does, however, if you look at it in comparison to last year, this actually cuts his cap hit in half.
Yeah.
He was hit that $12.5 million we're giving him over 2 years. That was his cap hit on us last year.
Yeah.
Right? So there's a I get the impact. There's going to have to be restructuring to Fred's point. But you just got a guy that last year cost you double, and it wasn't like he was completely unproductive last year, right? This is a veteran. He's a proven veteran. Even a proven veteran with an off year is still going to get paid. The interesting thing that comes out here, you may ask, well, why did he take half the money that he got last year? Well, We learned from Jacina Anderson on Twitter. She says, a source tells her Calais Campbell had interest from other teams. Those teams included the Colts, the Browns, and the Chiefs. So you ask why? She says, however, the Ravens were most aggressive in getting it done now and in bringing Campbell home. Mm. So it sounds like there was the talk, but everybody else was kind of waiting to see. It was probably that, let us see what happens the after draft. The draft.
It's always
and
the
then
draft.
We'll talk.
Yeah,
but the
after.
Ravens probably were like, look, here's our deal before the draft. We're willing to sign with you if you're willing to take this deal now. Can't promise what's coming afterwards, but we'll give you the contract now. We'll offer you this
now. I mean,
now.
You know each other, obviously. Yeah, exactly. You know, you've been here the last couple of years. You know each other.
But here's
it gives you the in.
Here's the thing. From a standpoint of a player, you're looking and watching them make all these moves, right? Cutting fat here, cutting fat there. They're trimming down. They basically trimmed down your contract, right?
Yeah.
So in all reality, you're watching them make moves to hopefully make a big splash later. You sign a safety, a strong safety in Marcus Williams, if he has the impact that we all think he can, along with those two cornerbacks, right, in Peters and Humphrey. If those guys can solidify the outfield, if you will, they can have a field day up front.
Yeah.
I mean, and so he's looking at that going, the more pressure you put things on back there, the more time it gives me and us to go there.
Yeah.
So I think it makes sense to me from a player's perspective that I get it's less money, but if he truly is going to the place that he thinks gives him the biggest opportunity, the best opportunity to win a championship, that's what he's all about. He clearly could have probably gotten more money.
Yeah.
But he didn't.
Especially because you look at some of the teams on there. I mean, I don't necessarily not necessarily the Chiefs, but the Colts and Browns still have a very favorable cap situation. So, like, especially the Colts, like, I think theirs is like the highest because they don't have, you know what I mean? They don't have a quarterback contract. There's not very many signed
James,
players.
Can you look that up on SportTrack? How much how much space they have?
For the Colts.
Colts, yeah.
The way the deal's looking, it's like it's definitely a one-year deal. I mean, it could be. It has that feeling like after this year, it could be
it
just
it depends
a one
on what
year.
Happens. We don't know if in this contract it wasn't announced. At least they're not saying that there was any player option or anything. But I think they still see that he's got stuff left in the tank. And we've talked about this before. Ravens have no hesitation bringing in veterans that wind up helping these younger guys and teaching these younger guys. Right? So who better to do it?
Yeah, and
I got you right here. Cap space with all is $15 million.
Where do they rank?
Huh?
Where do they rank in the league? Can you look that up?
They're pretty high.
They have a lot of cap space.
They're
in
pretty
the
high. They're normally like four or five. I think they were on the. I think Jacksonville's still number one.
Here's the thing, and I think we're all getting too caught up on the cap number here because the Ravens can create a lot of cap space if they make a couple of restructures on their deal. So it really didn't come down to cap
players
space.
Players have to agree to those restructures.
I understand that, but this came down to exactly what I said it would. Calais wasn't about the money. Calais was about what team gave him the best shot at winning now. He's at the end of his career. Everybody knows that. He was contemplating retirement prior to the end of last year, right? You look at this team that are on the list, the Colts, there's question marks there. Mm-hmm. There's a new quarterback there. The Browns, Deshaun Watson's pretty, but who knows if he's even going to play this year. The Chiefs just got rid of Tyreek Hill. You can argue that the Chiefs still give them a good chance at going to the Super Bowl, but that division around the Chiefs just got a whole hell of a lot better top to bottom, right? So the Ravens, with the familiarity and how he feels about this team with getting Lamar back and healthy, getting the running backs back and healthy, getting their weapons, I feel like I'm familiar here, the money's not too different, and they give me a very good shot at potentially going back to going to a Super Bowl, I guess.
Do you think there is something to it, that the aggressiveness that Jacina Anderson is talking about, with the fact that the Ravens were willing to put, basically, from what I'm gathering of this, the Ravens were the ones willing to put the offer on the table now.
So the Ravens have never been, against signing Calais. They've always been adamant about, hey, when you're ready to come back and you're ready to talk a deal, we're here.
Yeah, because Eric said that.
Exactly. Yes, so said it before. I don't think it's necessarily an aggressive type thing. I think Calais just wanted to get the deal wrapped up, and the Ravens were still there to do it.
James, what do you got?
I know we can save $2 million if we cut Sam Cook.
Jesus Christ.
So
we let his mic come on.
So well, I'm being serious, because potential out 2022, 2 years, $6.1 million, has a dead cap of $1 million. So you can cut him That's $2 million right there that we could sign a punter from the draft.
I'm sorry. I look over there and all I see is Fred taking a big bite out of the Butterfinger.
catching up.
So back to Calais for me. I said it a handful of weeks ago, and it at least having the additions of like a Michael Pierce on the line, it factors into it. But I still, for me, like it can't be he's the main piece. And right now, for me, like he's still. Bringing him in, which I'm glad he's here. Like, I am. I do like him. I like having him in the fold. I just, like you said, you're cutting a deal for 70% playing time because there is that worry of you not being able to get to the playing time or only being situational or what have you. But it still, to me, comes down to what are you doing in the draft as far as solidifying.
To supplement it.
Not even necessarily in the interior line. Like, yeah, that obviously there's some guys at the top that we've talked about in our mock drafts that we like, but it's the edge too. Like, you know what I mean? Like taking care of that edge so that inside helps that inside. I don't want the thinking to be like, you got Calais and now you don't need defensive line help and you don't know what you're getting out of Wolf. Let's just say that's the mystery right there. You don't know what you're getting from Wolf.
Right. And that's the problem is there's too many unpredictables, even with the draft, right? They're talking about wanting to go after a Super Bowl and win a Super Bowl now, right? You're in win now mode. So the guys that you're going to be drafting, unless you're talking about a first or second round pick, those are the only two guys that are going to be impact players year one, traditionally, yeah. Your first and second rounders. There's no guarantee that with the way that this draft is kind of working itself out with all the mock drafts and everything, that there's going to be an impactful interior defensive lineman there at number 14. You know, there's the guy that we've all been talking about out of Georgia for a while, but there's no guarantees that he's going to be there at 14. And if he's not, to have an insurance plan like Calais Campbell, who's not costing you a ton of money against the cap this year, again, restructures help you out even more. I think this wasn't, again, another sexy move. It's not a sexy move. It's a necessary move, and I don't blame the Ravens for it. Go ahead, James.
Real quick, because Fred was talking. His son hit a grand slam tonight.
Nice.
There we go. That boy, Seti Mo.
Breakable. So 4-2 Orioles. Bomb of the
Seti Mo.
There we go.
Coming in clutch at home.
Holy cow, dude.
Seti Donahue.
All right. I'm sorry. I had to.
Maybe he's coming out of that funk that everyone was worried about. I put quotations.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. We'll get to that later. But so the other big thing that happened this week was. We all thought we saw the writing on the wall with a certain player, but we said that there might be there was a caveat to it, and that we thought that they were releasing the player and saying, hey, here's what we would offer you. You go elsewhere, figure out what you can get, come back to us, and then we'll talk. Well, this past week, it's official. Tavon Young will not be a Raven next year as he signs a one-year $1.365 million deal with the Bears. Here's the kicker. Only $650,000 guaranteed.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, this tells me the Ravens either didn't want him or he didn't want to be a Raven anymore.
Yeah.
Flat out. Because that's
so heavy.
You figure that same exact deal.
So he does have.
Are you picking the Bears or are you picking the Ravens? Like, you know what I mean? The same exact deal.
Not wanting to be here.
Yeah, he didn't want to be here for whatever reason, play time, whatever. But he still, here's the sad part. He does have a dead cap hit on us, which is $3.83 million that's going to hit our dead cap space. So there is impact there because of the contract that we previously gave him.
Yeah.
But it just goes to show you, even another team says, well, we'll give you money, but you got to stay healthy.
So
dude.
If they would have brought, say he signed that exact deal with that the Bears gave him, does that like that dead cap number still would be there?
Because it's still hit you.
That's the old contract.
At that point, you're talking almost $5 million.
Yeah. Pretty much. Yeah.
For a guy that can't stay, that hasn't been able to stay healthy when he's been on the field. To Fred's point a few weeks ago, he has had production. I get it. But if you're not on the field, you can't be productive.
I'm sorry. This dead cap has to be taken care of. Like, I would look at Bill Oliva. He retired on his own. We still have a dead cap of $3.2 million. Like,
yeah, I've never, like, understood or like, really liked
I
that.
Think
because
if someone retires, there should be no dead cap.
Because that happened when Brady retired for a couple days. Like, they were saying, like, he would have been a $20 million dead cap. I'm like, well, the guy is fucking 45. Like, he's retired. Like, this shouldn't matter. I feel
I'm
you.
Sorry.
That's one of the things that always confused me.
There should be no dead cap. They should allow that to go go back on to be able to sign other people.
Well, if you have it and you say, okay, if you're going to retire, that money's going to be paid out to you over the course of, you put a number out there, over X amount of years. And that number's paid out to you, but it doesn't affect, the team has to pay it to you ultimately, but it doesn't affect your ability to progress as an organization. To your point, you know, with a $20 million cap hit with Brady in a situation like that, have that happened, that's devastating for teams.
Yeah.
But right? Didn't we re-sign Ben Mason?
That happened a while back, yeah.
No, but why we have dead cap from his I guess from draft to him in the
from fourth, his original dead con- his original contract.
So this
yeah,
this was a bad draft that we now yeah. we're probably paying him less and have more dead cap to pay for him.
Fred, your take on the Tavon Young leaving and not, you know, winding up not signing, any problem with it?
Or? I mean, I told you, like, again, at that little bit of money, it made 100% sense for the Ravens to bring him back. But to me, if he didn't come back, that either said the Ravens were just parting ways and being done with Tavon Young because of the risk factor with the injuries, to your point, or that meant Tavon didn't want to be here. I don't know why the hell Tavon wouldn't want to be here, because he was immediately in the starting lineup every time he came back from being healthy, and the Ravens paid him a lucrative amount of money to be sitting on the sidelines injured, right? So I don't know why he wouldn't want to be here. But at the end of the day, he's not, right? And we've got some holes at cornerback that we need to fill, right? And that's kind of the next thing I wanted to bring up, right? Let's recap some of the things that have happened, right? We're talking Marcus Williams comes in, and now they've got that ball-hawking free safety on the back end they haven't had in recent years. They re-signed Michael Pierce and Calais Campbell, so that helps kind of reassure the defensive line that was just completely bare last week, right? Now we've got a couple of guys there. They brought Josh Bynes in to help with the inside linebacker crew, right? Tony Jefferson, he's going to be tagging along for another year. So again, that gives them some more depth at safety. So now your mindset kind of gets a better picture of what the Ravens are probably going to be looking at come draft weekend, right? Which we're just over 2 weeks away at this point, yep, right? Yep. From the draft,
2 weeks,
right?
From Thursday.
So I got a couple of draft-related questions that I wanted to throw out at you guys, and I wanted to see your opinions on this. And some of these come from Twitter. And, I, you know, for you guys that are out there listening to us now, if you've got any draft-related questions, throw them in the chat room. I'll throw them out to these guys, and we'll answer them back and forth. But the first one comes from Sarah Ellison on Twitter. You guys all know Sarah Ellison, right? We're formerly with the Ravens. She's a great Twitter personality, just a great person. She put out there, if the Ravens were to draft David Ajabo, which if you guys all know David Ajabo, he was the defensive end outside linebacker for Michigan that was projected to the Ravens earlier, but he had the the injury. He had the Achilles tear during his pro day workout, right? If the Ravens were to draft Ajabo, what round pick would you guys be okay with it? Obviously not a first round at this point. It's definitely not 14. But what round would you be okay with somebody with that kind of potential but coming back off of a serious injury?
Late third, early fourth. Okay. That would be the earliest, and that's the earliest. Because guy coming off injury, I didn't like, you know, what they did with Hollywood. You rush him back, those type of things. When you get a guy and you rush him back from situations like that, now Hollywood's wasn't nearly as bad as Jabu's, and Hollywood's happened much earlier than the draft did. Right, you're so close to the draft at this point, you don't know what the recovery is. You don't know if this guy's going to be able to pivot, push off of the Achilles. I mean, you got to think, as a defensive player, you got to be able to push guys, especially on that front line. You got to be able to push them. And you're, what do you think you're using? Your toes are up in the ground. That's your Achilles you're feeling, people. That's your Achilles. This is a serious injury, right? There's a reason that some people argue that Terrell Suggs never truly came back from his injury. Anything in that lower foot, God, you better be careful, because it could ruin a career. You can't rush it. And because of that, I'm not willing. There's too many other guys. There's too many other guys in the first and even second round that I would pick over him, because they can have an instant impact day one. Now, yes, they all have injury risk, but these guys have impact day one. He still has another 6 months, 8 months worth of rehabbing before you're even going to have him back to true football activities.
Right.
So for me, late third, early fourth is the absolute earliest I'm taking a guy like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I can't disagree with you there. Cause look, I was a big fan before the injury, looking at mock drafts and doing my own. Like, that was a guy that, like, I pegged, like, granted, you know, how things can go. He can go before 14, but, like, he was a guy I pegged to 14. And then with the injury, I mean, say, like, at the 45th pick, I feel like normally I'd be okay with that. But the problem is you're taking on a huge risk, obviously, but you've already got risks. You got Dobbins and Gus that you don't know what you're getting back. You don't. And I
you've got about 6 to 8 players that you're literally rolling the dice on.
Me, I think they're going to be back. We'll get more discussion on running backs. But you got their injuries. You don't know what's going on. You got Peter's injury. You don't know what's going on. You got Stanley that we got some a little bit of encouraging news lately, but you don't know what's going on. I mean, even, you know, to a lesser extent, you don't know what's going on with Marlon. I mean, it's an easier injury to recover from. What do you have? But there's just too many risks on veterans coming back that we just you can't assume that risk. Like last year's draft seemed like you were making like the Ben Masons, and I like Stevens, but like Mason, Stevens, Wade, you were drafting guys that are projects or stuff like that. I'm fine with projects. I'm not fine with someone that you don't know if you're even gonna ever have really play. And
everybody's
play
got a number.
Year.
Everybody's got a number, yeah. Drew. So what number is that? So, if he's sitting there second, third, fourth, what round are you actually
considering?
It'd
have to be like late, something like late second.
Late second.
And they used a bunch, like literally like 62.
Trading back in.
Like trading
second.
Back in. They'd still have their, they still made their original pick, but they got like 5 fourths. Anyone can be saying, I'll take 3 fourths and a third. You know what I mean?
I get it.
That
get
is
it.
Being as high as I go. Oof. But I am not making any trade up or nothing. Like you said, it's third, fourth round because you just, as it's our team like us, you can't assume the risk.
All right.
It's too much.
James, what do you got?
I'm all about picking them in the second round, second or third. Nowadays, with technology and all those, injuries don't mean anything. These guys, if they want it, they're going to get it. And if you can pick them up in the second round or even the third, take it. And like Drew said, we got so many fourth picks. We could trade back into third. But I think he's going to be gone in the late second. I don't think he's going to be high second, but I think he will be gone.
I think it, too, because I think there's some teams that are
a
little bit.
You're going to have a team like maybe
Tampa or something.
Tampa,
like,
all we'll, that don't need him anyway.
Like, I could see him getting drafted in the first, in the late, late first round, nah. Because I could see teams like a Tampa or a Chiefs saying, look, like, you're not going to be
think
the key
he's got
right
a bigger
away.
Long-term impact.
You know what I mean? Long-term impact. That's what they think, where they feel like you're still a Super Bowl contender if they miss him for half a year.
See,
Cam Akers is going to be the barometer for me.
I don't see it because I feel second because first you got to pay. Well, you do get that extra year, so that's good. But also you got to pay him the money and he's not playing. So I see him going mid-second round. Someone's going to pick him up. So like that really doesn't need him. But if he does pan out, you got yourself a monster.
Yeah, it's not the same injury types, but like you've had guys like Jalen Smith and the dude Mack in Jacksonville, like where they had injuries right before the end of their college career, and you were like, oh man, you were going to be a top 15 pick, and now you're the first 5 picks of the second round because someone was like, you know what, it's worth it.
Yeah.
I can see it. All right, so you asked the question, so now it's your turn, Fred. Where are you going with this? What's your number?
Yeah, so I'm going to fall probably in the middle of where you two were with it. I think both of you made good points. It actually made me second-guess some stuff. So I like David Ojabo, and I like his talent. Obviously, it comes at a position of dire need for the Ravens, right? And I think I'll be kind of back and forth. If the Ravens haven't gone edge rusher in the first 2 rounds, to your point, Drew, I might be considering packaging a deal and moving in late second, but I don't know. I think for me, what I feel a lot better about is packaging deals to move back into the third for it.
Yeah.
Just because, again, the Ravens have a small window right now of potentially winning a Super Bowl, right? And they need impact players. So taking him with your second round pick, 45 overall, doesn't make sense to me because he's basically a wash for next year, and then he's going to be a rookie a year from now, coming back, not playing for an entire year. So many question marks with that. I like him as his potential, and to your point, James, and you made a great point, these guys are coming back faster from injuries than they've ever come back, especially from these types of things. ACLs, Achilles, all of these things. It's insane what the medical field has been able to do with that. But again, it's still, I want the most value that I can get for this particular year. And for me, I'd feel more comfortable in the third.
And that's the thing that kind of, you know, when you're talking about that, it's you treat some of those guys semi, like, in a sense, semi, like, a little bit of a project. They can have an impact as soon as they get back, which he could.
Right.
But it's a matter of when does he come back, right? If you're saying, okay, hey, he's progressing, to James's point, if you talk to his agent and his agent says, look, here's a medical piece from our medical guy that says he's progressing and that they're projecting him to be back in 6 months. You have my attention. Now we're talking October. He's coming back right in time to be, if we're making a push, he can come back and help finish the push, provide you depth late. Mm-hmm. But if they're saying, look, it's going to be another 8 to 10 months, he's progressing okay, but it's, you know, it's going to be a little bit longer, then you can't do that. You can't say this is a second round guy, because that's not a guy that's going to be able to make an immediate impact on our team. Now, to James's point, another team that doesn't necessarily need it, but says, hey, we don't mind taking on the project this early because we see the higher return later. A team that's not necessarily in it right now. A team like the Eagles, the Colts, right? Those are teams that could wind up doing something like that. I don't see contenders willing to do that, especially if you see your window is shrinking, right? We all questioned, you mentioned, you know, the Bucks. We all questioned, what are the Bucks going to do with Brady gone, which means Gronk is gone, which probably meant Jensen was gone.
Yeah.
What are they going to do? Their team is falling apart. In that situation, they weren't taking the project. They may have taken the project, because it would have been, hey, we're not going to win now. We're going to go ahead and do this. We're
going to retool until we get that quarterback back. Yeah.
But now they're back into win now mode.
Yeah.
So are they going to be a team that – I don't think that happens. So it's going to be interesting to see how all that shakes out. I think that was a really great question, because it really does make you think, okay, do we take the risk? We've taken the risk on injured players before. We've had it work at times. But it doesn't always work. We've seen other teams do it and it fail. So it's really just, it's what are you getting? How long is it going to take? A lot of X factors here. But for me, I think you and I are on the same page. It's a late third. Early fourth is kind of the earliest. Sounds like we got a little bit of mixture, but we're all in agreement. He's not a first-round guy anymore.
All right, so I got the next question for you. And, Drew, you've already kind of alluded to them. There's been some question marks around J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards' health. And are they going to be ready? And it got a little bit cloudier over the last week, because there were rumors about the Ravens having reported interest in free agent running back Melvin Gordon. Melvin Gordon is a starting running back in this league, fellas, and if J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards are healthy, he is number three on this running back core. Do you worry that maybe something isn't right here with those two running backs as to why they're interested in Gordon? Curious.
Nope.
Okay, why?
You know what this reminds me of? Big Trust! That whole situation with Mark Ingram. You brought in a veteran to help you. He did his job. He worked. This brings you insurance policy. That's what this is. If you can make the money work, it's an insurance policy. Now, am I worried? Maybe. But it also becomes now not a three-headed monster. It's a four-headed monster in the backfield now. Right? Who the fuck are they going to trot out there this down?
Yeah.
Right? And now you don't have to rush back the two guys that you're most worried about from injury. This is, if they can pull this deal off and make it make sense with the cap and make it not be this super aggressive deal, and maybe Gordon is saying, this is, it's that Calais mentality. This is the place that I think gives me the best shot to win a title, win a ring, even if I'm not the heavy back. Hey, you mean I can lighten the load and get a ring? Some guys, don't know. Some guys, minded, that's their mentality.
If he minded not being the focal point, he's been splitting. He split a lot of carries with Javonte Williams last year and didn't complain. You know what I mean? So same situation.
He come said, back, work team. Behind Lamar Jackson.
So, Drew, does it excite you or does it concern you?
Oh, man, the mixed emotions. And I was flying off the handle when I guess Fred was the first one that did in our group chat that day that it came out.
Yeah.
Look, we already know I love Dobbins, and I can't hide that shit. And then I can't hide the fact that, like, I've been holding on to Dobbins and Gus Edwards in my fantasy league. So
you were questioning that after
so
this.
So I'll get to the real football in a second. But so when the news broke, it did kind of, like, it concerned me that, one, it's a rumor. So, like I said, all the emotions were going through my head, everything in my head, like, what was it, this situation?
Until it's announced, it's face value.
Until it's announced, it could be the motherfucker signs with the Raiders. You know what I mean? Like, we don't know. So I was a little bit worried at that because I want to see Dobbins be the focal point. I know Gus would still be there. Like, say no Sands injury. Well, they come back perfectly healthy.
Gus is your power back, and Dobbins is...
So I just... Since they drafted Dobbins, like, I've wanted to see him be, like, the guy.
Yeah.
So having Gordon, like, thinking about Gordon being here kind of annoys me and worries me a little bit with being able to see the best we can out of Dobbins. But, I mean, it just goes to show that, like, they still want to try to do the same stuff they were doing in 2019. Now, that could be a negative or it could be a positive, however you want to take it. But at least, especially early on the season, you would know you're not riding Dobbins or Gus Edwards into the ground, and I know you don't want to face the same situations you had last year. Now, I also feel like how much is the money? That's always the thing with us. But I don't necessarily think it was all just, okay, yeah, you lost your whole running back room and you pieced together with these veterans. But if that offensive line was producing like they had been the last couple of years, I still think like some of these guys could have done better because Freeman was showing a lot of life late. So I'm not saying it would necessarily be Freeman, but I think there's a good bit of running backs in the draft to look at. We've talked about it before, whereas it would be a whole lot cheaper probably one way or the other than signing a guy like Gordon.
But I think we all agree Gordon would be a hell of an RB3 running back.
I've always liked Melvin Gordon.
He would be.
Like I said, it was real mixed emotions. I don't know where the rumor's at now. Because
we're trying, Robert. Well, we're trying to think positive.
But
it's
died
down. I was trying to cover all bases.
Let me throw another thing out there, though.
It hurt me when you... like.
Let me throw another thing out there, though. If let's say, you're trotting Gus out there, you're trotting Dobbins out there, and Gordon to an extent, and it comes trade deadline.
Yeah.
And somebody comes a knocking and you feel like you're one, maybe two pieces away. And they're willing to say, I'll take one of the three. Are you considering it? Right? Now that signing becomes more valuable because you don't have to rely on somebody like Justice Hill.
Yeah.
To get out there, right? You have your three bell cows and you've saved them, and then you're putting the one out there, you're doling the one out there that you're hopefully probably looking to trade, right? Maybe it's a Gus and it's a trading sign. Maybe it's I hate to say this, knock on wood, but maybe it's a Dobbins because of his value of being younger.
Dude, that's knock like real hard. All right.
There we go.
I need my guy.
But no, my whole point is making sure that you understand that this is there's other things that could be at play here. James, any take on this, like with this running
Melvin
back
Gordon,
Melvin
man,
Gordon?
Does he excite you or what?
It excites me. Yeah. There's nothing, you can never have too many backs. That's right. My opinion, especially with what happened last year. And we're going out every day looking for a running back to fill whatever. I think he's still a productive back compared to what we had. And if he wants to come here for a good deal, why not? What? That's one less competition on the field for us.
So yeah. I'm kind of the same mindset as you, James. Like, I don't think it's reality that we're going to have Melvin Gordon RB3, but if he's willing to do that, like, why the fuck wouldn't you? If you could afford it and make it work and not handicap you financially, of course you entertain that. Why wouldn't you? You'd be an idiot not to. But did it first at first alarm me? Yeah, because that immediately thought, oh shit, now news is going to come out that J.K. Dobbins or Gus Edwards have, you know, stumbled along the way of their rehab and it's going to take longer than expected.
They found the Baltimore pothole.
Yeah, something happened and it was going to be negative. Sorry, Robert, not trying to be negative, but that's how I felt when I first read that, right? And but no, I mean, like you said, we are a run-first team. I know everybody wants to see this explosive passing game, and we will have an explosive passing game. It's just not going to be a 5,000-yard season with Lamar. It never will be. That's not how this offense is designed. And in 2019, we were the highest-scoring team in the league. If we are getting back to that, to the Drew's point, then that's not a bad thing. It just might not be how the fans want to see it, in my opinion.
I got one that we haven't really discussed, really. I don't think Stanley's going to play this year.
Yeah.
Everything that's way it's looking, people comment, like, they're not really talking about it. At the press conference, they say, oh, he's looking good. They're keeping on hush-hush, like, I don't think it's a good thing.
And it's
Fred,
a concern.
I was going to say, Fred, we were talking about this, all the different spots, right? If you look at all of this, we have top 3 to 4 left tackles, right? Top 2 cornerbacks, 3 to 5 edge rushers, 2 interior defensive linemen, all are on the board at pick 14. There are so many different options that you could go here. So ultimately, where do you go, right? If you're looking at this, do you go ahead, you go with one of these guys that you feel is a big need, or are you looking and saying, you know what, maybe we trade back. Maybe we go after the center that we've all coveted, Linderbaum, right? We've all said we need an everyday future center. There's things like that. There's a lot of different things.
Let me put that in perspective for you here, man. So you look at those positions of need, right? At tackle, to your point, we've talked about Ronnie Stanley. He's a big question mark, although I will put your mind at ease a little bit. I did see a post on either Instagram or Twitter today of him running backwards on the sand on the beach. So if that's anything that, you know, says that he can do something, he's moving around at least a little bit. That's the first I've seen of Ronnie Stanley in a while, other than sitting on a couch doing his podcast.
They said man walked backwards and basically jogged backwards on the beach for 2 straight miles without stopping.
Yeah, it's pretty fucking impressive.
You want to believe that or you don't want to believe it?
Right.
Hey, that's what got out there.
But beyond Ronnie Stanley,
and there is a clip. There's at least you're seeing him do it. Like right. I wouldn't even believe that was possible.
Give
6 months
a little
ago.
Bit better than fucking turf or grass.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. But beyond, here's the thing: beyond Ronnie Stanley, who do you have? Right, you got Juwan James, who's a big question mark, hasn't played football in a long time. Moses, you signed to be your right tackle, not play left tackle. So if Ronnie Stanley isn't healthy, you've got a problem at left tackle again. Yeah. And the Ravens don't want a repeat of last year because, to your point, like that was an issue. Our offensive line was a big part of why our running game struggled. It wasn't just the injuries. It was the injuries on top of the injuries on the offensive line.
And when your running game struggles, your pass game struggles.
Exactly. The whole offense is effective, right? So that's just that position alone. You take a look at cornerback. We just talked about cornerback. You lost Anthony Averett. He's gone. Tavon Young, officially gone. Chris Westry, officially gone. Most likely, Jimmy Smith is probably going to retire. So, DBs right now with starting experience on this team, Marlon.
Well, he better retire.
Listen, the only DBs that have starting experience on this team right now are Marlon and Peters, both coming back from injury right now. The other corners on this team include Kayvon Seymour, Robert Jackson, Amon Marshall, where the hell's he been, and Kevin Tolliver.
Didn't they drop Marshall?
No, he's still on the roster.
He's still there because he keeps getting hurt. So
if you'd like, you can also include safeties Brandon Stevens and our Darius Washington, who I think has the potential of moving into slot, that you can include them in that group. But last year, they started the season with 6 cornerbacks on the roster, and only 2 of them now have starting experience.
Hey, Fred,
that's a problem.
I'm going to let you know, I'm calling this now. As much as we need offense, I'm going to call it now. The way that the Ravens have been looking and what they've been saying, I've been reading through the lines. I think, to your point, they're going to either the 14th pick go pass rush or corner. And I feel they're going to package what we have in our fourth and maybe go back in the first round or add another second round and go offense.
Well, I don't think you're wrong because if you look, we just talked about corner. If you look at edge rusher, right, mm-hmm. You have Adafe and you have Bowser. Odafe's coming off of surgery. Bowser's no guarantee that he's going to be ready for opening day. Beyond that, you got Dalen Hayes, who played 4 snaps last year as a rookie, right? You've got Jalen Ferguson, who's had 4.5 sacks in 3 freaking years at this point.
Plus. Sack daddy,
right. The guy that broke all the records for fucking Terrell Suggs, right? Supposedly, Malik Harrison's going to get a shot outside. We don't know how that's going to work. He doesn't have blazing speed. He's a hitter, right? So I don't know how he's going to be on the edge. Beyond that, that is your biggest need, right? So you've got 3 positions that are really, really big question marks at 14. It's
like
kind of hard to see what the Ravens do.
We all think that we need offense. I don't think they're going to do it. I still think, as much as I would love to shift it to the offense, I don't think they're ready yet for that. And I feel like they're going to either go corner or pass rush at 14, whichever the best player is right there, and somehow they're going to get back.
I think, to your point, I think injuries and injuries in free agency affected what they were doing. And yes, Flock Nation, DBs are pizza crust thin.
100%.
They are. And that's kind of what Fred was alluding to is there's so much here. And James, I will say, I don't disagree with you. I could see them going defense here as much as people like it. Now, it's going to depend who's on the board. Correct. Because if there is a top-tier offensive player on the board, we all know the Ravens do one of two things. They either take best player available or they trade back.
Yeah.
So if their guys are all there, expect them to trade back at least five picks.
Well, then give me your pick. Give me your pick. I want to hear what everybody's doing. If you're at 14, the top, let's say, third and fourth ranked left tackle are on the board. Both top cornerbacks. Sauce is there, and the kid out of LSU is there, Stingley. I'd say 3 through 5 ranked edge rushers are there. Your top two interior defensive linemen are there. All on the board at pick 15. Which way are you going and why? The semi-wild card, like you said, is a potential trade back for Linderbaum, because I love Linderbaum, but I don't know if center's the bigger
guy. Real
right
quick,
now.
James.
Well, we already know. I already want Trevor Pennington, but I know the Ravens are going to take it. That's not how they are. We all think we need to work on our offense, but after what they've been signing and picking up that safety pay, I think they want this to be the best defense back on top again, and I just feel like pass rusher is number one or corner. So whatever at 14, whatever the best player for that position, I think they're going to take, and then I think they're going to trade back in there for the offense.
You gave me what you think they're going to do, but what are you? If you're the GM,
I already told you, I'm taking my boy Pennington.
You're taking Penning. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That's. I mean, I don't hate that pick, so I like it. What are you guys doing? Let's start with you, Scott.
For me, if it's me and all those guys are on the board.
You don't have to give me names, man. Just give me position.
You can't deny the talent that is Sauce Gardner. You can't.
I would love for him to be
if
there.
If he's there. He's not going to be there. If he's there. But I'm saying.
That's what we're posing a hypothetical.
He's posing a hypothetical. If all these guys that you're talking about are there, to me, it's you got to go with where do you have the biggest question mark. And the biggest question mark is, are your two best cornerbacks this organization has seen the best tandem ever in the organization. You don't know what either guy these guys are coming back from. You need an insurance policy, and you need an insurance policy that can be effective day one if you need them to be.
You need that sauce out there.
All right, Drew.
I like sauce.
However it happens, like Linderbaum for a while has been my A1. I mean, doing mock drafts and stuff, like, to me, he's been my A1, and then I'm kind of like, if it is like a Jermaine Johnson or Davis from Georgia on the line, those have been my, like, defensive guys. I mean, I'm not opposed to a cornerback if it is, like, Gardner or Stingley, but then it's like if one of those two dropped to 14, maybe that's a big red flag because they could both be going in the top 10, or maybe a lot of quarterbacks somehow fly off the board because people get scared. So my A1 is Linderbaum, but I'm not opposed to an edge rusher. But I also think that, like, with edge and cornerback, from doing mock drafts and then looking into stuff, like, I think there is far more depth at getting corners and edge in the second round or packaging picks, and you're trading back in. Like, if you're going to have 2 second picks or a couple thirds to get it that way. But to me, so in saying Linderbaum or even Penn, like some of these tackles or Linderbaum, like it has to be the offensive line because, like, just say what we were already talking about with Gordon coming in.
Right.
Now, if this is Gordon and you're trying to run the ball again and still, I mean, look at the weapons that Lamar has and package all that together. Well, then you have to give it time and you have to get, like, that's where the offensive line is. So for me, it's always about in the trenches anyway.
All right, so I don't disagree with you, and I don't think I'd be disappointed with any of these picks, as long as we're talking about these couple of position groups, right? I don't think I'm going to be disappointed, but I think in order of priority here, no, it's not going to be a quarterback.
I know that, but
John Harbaugh made that clear on Rich Eisen. It's not going to be a quarterback. They will not draft a quarterback in the first round. Here's where my brain is at, right? So we know the two biggest needs right now are, in my opinion, are cornerback and edge rusher. And cornerback, like I said, we only have two starters on the roster that are previous starter, both of them coming back from injury. But there's plenty of options on the free agent marker still at cornerback. edge rusher, there's not a lot of talent on the free agent market right now for edge, right? And again, that is a position of severe need. I like edge rusher here, but I think 1A is edge rusher, 1B is cornerback, and I don't like Sauce here. I like Stingley, and here's why. Sauce, I think, is a very good cornerback, and I think he will be an elite talent at this and at the NFL level, but he played in a softer conference. Stingley played in the SEC, and who did he lock down in practice for years?
Yeah.
Ja'Marr Chase. Who is Ja'Marr Chase play for? Cincinnati Bengals. That is a matchup that's going to eat at us
inside
for years.
Information.
That is going to eat at us for years. If he can do anything like he did in practice fair against enough. Ja'Marr Chase, I like Stingley. Athletically, even with the little bit of a foot injury that he has right now, he still ran a 4.3, 7.40, looked great in all the drills. So personally, I really like Stingley. But I think the bigger need, because of the way the market is laid out right now free agent-wise, edge rusher, Jermaine Johnson, that kind of guy would be the smarter pick, in my opinion.
All right, fair enough. And you got, you know, William Sable saying, I say address pass rusher corner at 14. And then he makes a good point. If you're talking offensive tackle, Falele is in the second round.
Exactly.
So he is a guy that
I love that guy out of Minnesota, big dude.
And worst case scenario, if you think he's going to go that early, that is a guy that I wouldn't mind trading up because there are projections that say early second round for him. If you're that fearful, then go get him with the last pick in the first round. Do what you did semi with Lamar and jump in front of everybody and grab him before they get in the second round. I don't have a problem with that because he does have good tackle talent and they're there. But at 14, I think there's too many needs. I think we all agree there's too many needs to ignore that there is probably a pick that makes sense at 14. Or I'll even say 14 to 20 if they happen to trade back a few picks. But that's kind of where I stand with
and
things.
My philosophy a little bit on it, too, is like it's probably not cut and dry is what I'm going to say. But like I don't want to keep getting these like tackles and guards and centers in the third or fourth round. And you don't know if they're ever going to pan out. Like, I mean, Cleveland could come around, but like we were so hot about Cleveland. We've been hot about a lot of guards, like a lot of offensive linemen that just never really panned out. Where like where we're at in the draft, like taking a guy like Penning or Linderbaum or some of these other tackles, if you're training back and you know what I mean, get your picks and still get a tackle. Like I would really rather that offensive line be solidified by someone who's ready to be a starter right away, not someone who's got to go through camp and we don't know if he'll be the third string guard. I don't.
It's a double edged sword, right? Because you either get somebody that can be a starter and you know add depth. You know the guys that are already on the offensive line become further down the depth chart, right? So you get a guy that's that starter and immediate impact. Or you get the insurance policy on your secondary. It's a double-edged sword here, right? You know, or the insurance policy on edge rusher, however you want to look at it. Because ultimately, whatever you're doing, it's an insurance policy somehow. It's either you don't know what you're getting out of the guys that are coming back, or you want a guy that can make an immediate impact day one and will be a starter day one. So that's what you have to decide. That's what the Ravens are going to need to look at. A lot of big question marks.
There's
out here.
A lot of holes. I mean, when you look at this roster, there's absolutely a lot of holes in this roster. The problem is you have to prioritize things. You have to prioritize in the sense that who's going to make the biggest impact day one.
Right.
You cannot miss on a first and second round pick. You absolutely can't.
You can't afford to.
You can't afford to, right? We've already had too many misses in the past. If you want to win and win right now, these have to be the most impactful players and that fill the biggest hole. Are there multiple holes? Yeah. But what's that large gaping hole that you need fucking cement and you need fucking everything to fill it up? And for me, it's edge rusher and cornerback right now, at least in my opinion.
All right, fair enough. All right. It is time for our brew of the week now.
Yes, David, we are.
What?
Yes, if we were doing the call-in show with draft night.
Absolutely,
the call-ins, but we are doing a live show on
draft. Yeah, we will. We'll do the call-ins for sure.
Now, Steven Sievers, please
Steven
call
Sievers.
In.
The real Steven Sievers. Please stand up.
At least I know like who Steven Sievers is now. So.
We've got some things going on, but everybody kind of brought or has a few different brews. James, thank you for bringing a few different brews in for us this week. So what's everybody sipping on tonight? What's your brew this week?
All right, well, I'll start. I've got this... Lactose Simplicity Strawberry Hazy IPA. So if you like the, you know, the kind of girly drinks, the milkshake IPAs, you know, it doesn't have the alcohol content on this can anywhere. I look for it freaking everywhere.
We'll have to look it up.
I don't see it, so we'll have to look it up. But for me, I like the fruity. I like the fruity beers. I'm okay with it. It's a good summer beer. So if you're drinking any, you know, with crabs or anything like that, that's what this beer reminds me of. It's not thick. It's a milkshake IPA, but it's not thick.
Throw him some like fruit or butterfingers, he'll catch it. Throw him a baseball.
Exactly.
The way
baseball,
it's
looking, no, we're
with
good.
Saying fruity and all that, you look like a Oompa Loompa on the camera.
James, what are you drinking on over there?
Well, I'm drinking this cranberry pomegranate margarita goose. It's delicious.
Yeah, I thought I had one. I downed mine. I thought it was pretty good.
I know.
It's got Fred's pieces of fruit in it, too.
It does. It threw me off when I got to the bottom.
Catching it at the bottom.
I know Fred's not a sour beer kind of guy, but this is tasty.
Yeah.
This
is right is up it my sour, alley. Though? It's, strawberry?
It has like a little bit. It's not strawberry. It's cranberry.
Oh, cranberry. All right. Okay. Gotcha.
So Drew and I over here, we both drank our cranberry margaritas, our cranberry pomegranate margaritas. So we're going to try two beers on live on air here. He's got Fresh Fun Yum Juicy. James, who the hell is this from?
It's
from
California, but apparently the guy is a native of Baltimore. He moved out there. And,
looks like a box of nerds.
Yeah, their whole line of beers are all like 90s.
Sweethearts?
Bubble Yum.
Okay.
That's exactly what that is the knockoff of the Bubble Yum.
Tastes pretty good?
I mean, yeah, I got to get to here to really be able to give it good because it's a pale ale. It's IPA. It's we kind of used to those. So it doesn't taste bad the first couple sips.
Okay.
No, I like it so far. And stuff like this, like the can alone, like when it just takes that nostalgia shit, like
and,
from you went back in the day.
And the
like,
texture on it. Have
I'll
you
take
felt
it.
Like the texture of it? Like
the can's like bumpy.
Yeah, it's got like
bumps on it.
It's interesting.
Yeah. Figure out the ABV on that while you're looking at that. I've got Untitled Art. These guys have put out a few different brews. This is their Florida seltzer. It's a pineapple mango hard seltzer, 5%. This thing's actually pretty good. This is dangerous because I could probably down a few of these. This is like soda water mixed with like pineapple juice and mango is what all it tastes like.
Yeah, sounds
but it
good.
Tastes amazing.
On a great day, like how it was yesterday at the ballpark, sitting on your deck drinking that.
Sit on my deck, drink that, get a little sunburn, get the raccoon one. Eyes going on.
This one's 6.8.
Oh, wait, now that I can change the cameras. Whoops, wrong one.
Yeah,
there you go. That's what it looks like, people.
God.
That's what it looks like. It's pretty bad.
That's what Mother Nature will do.
There was a couple times when me and him were making eye contact, and I'm just like, I'm holding back, like not laughing. Not because I know what's underneath the glasses, because he's wearing sunglasses, like... In here, like you don't need them, like in my mind, like what is he,
I
still don't know what he's wearing it for.
Oh man!
All right, fellas. Well, we don't have a ton of people in the chat room tonight, but we got a good bit of people commenting. We got David, Joe Carlozo, as always. We got William, Adit, Rick, Sherry, Flock Nation, Robert, Garth West. I don't know if that's Garnet West in disguise or what's
it's
going
like,
on.
It's like be more YouTube.
Wait. Or can Fred not read?
Yeah. No, it's Garth West.
Or it's Ryan's new
Twitter handle.
Right. And we got Saga City Lawless out there. Hadn't seen him in the chat room or might be a new name. So appreciate you guys chatting it up. Everybody's kind of in agreement for the most part. David's got some takes. He wants to go heavy offense versus defense. Thinks that could help the team a little bit faster than defense.
But Antonio chiming in saying, Dogfish IPA.
Antonio for the win. Appreciate
it, man.
What's up,
Drew, is what he says.
I like it.
So I guess you know Antonio.
Yeah, I'm confused. I can't remember. It's a guy I work with. It's Marvin, but I think I don't remember what he told me a while back. Like I got him to watch a show.
Yeah.
And I think it was one time, like the first time I was producing, and like I was like, I read the name. And he goes, that was me. So shout out, Bubba.
There we go. All right. Well, it is time for some bros, bows, and o's. And obviously, guys, it's baseball. It's baseball season. We have kicked off.
The weather of today, that weather breaks and stays that way. It definitely feels like fucking baseball.
It's getting there. And the Orioles obviously celebrating them going through and saying, you know, that the baseball is back. It's the 30th anniversary of Camden Yards. We shared this last week. They're doing a promo, 1992 pricing for, it wasn't yesterday, but it was for tonight, tomorrow night, all the way through the 17th. So the whole Yankee series. Tickets are available, $4 for bleachers, $8 upper reserves, $12, $13, and $18 for box seats. Savings each seating location range from approximately from 50 to 85%. They're really cutting it down. They're doing $1.75 dogs all day long, but max of two per transaction. So just crazy. They're really throwing their deals out there, trying to bring people to the yard, trying to get people excited. And we saw, you know, a lot of different things at Camden Yards. We're going to get into those in a few. But before we actually get into opening the home opener, let's actually get into opening weekend for the O's as they took on Tampa Bay in the first series of the season. I got to hit on a bright spot for me. It had to be Anthony Santander in this series. 375, had three hits, a homer, two walks, an RBI and 1K through 11 plate appearances in this series. I thought he showed out really well. He's doing well out in left field, looking good out there. Able to still build up the trade value. I get it. I understand.
He's one guy. Like I've always liked him, but man, I think like I just hope he is on the field because that was the problem last year. He started off good for the first couple weeks, and then the injury completely screwed things up for a couple months. And you didn't have that trade value again. Because, I mean, I like him, but obviously what we've experienced it
2 years in a row.
He's not going to be here long-term one way or the other. There's so many outfield prospects that are legit and that we're high on as it is.
Stewart.
You know what I mean? Yeah, definitely not that guy. But
shut the fuck. I don't know.
There we go without even announcing it. It's like, this is the new Chris Davis. Like, I don't want to hear that guy's name. Right.
Drew, in the opening series in Tampa, what was a bright spot for you?
Mountcastle. That home run was awesome. It was a bomb and it was opposite field.
Yeah.
And that's a weird stadium to hit in anyway, because it's a horrible, horrible place.
Scaffolding up
but,
top.
I mean, what, five hits over the weekend with the home run. That's the guy like on the roster right now that like end all be all for me. Like I want to see you just keep.
Yeah. He had 417 in the series.
I'm not saying I want to see you keep hitting 350. You know, it June 1st and it's. You're batting 350 and 20 home runs. Like, that'd be cool. I just want to see. Not realistically, but just some consistency where, like, you don't drop down to 200.
Well, this was a guy.
Oh, it's cool. You have 10 home runs.
This guy, at the beginning
June,
of last year, they were talking about sending back down.
Yeah,
so the
exactly.
fact that he wanted to show that he's continued his success. Mm-hmm. How about you, Fred? Any bright spots?
No, I think Adley Rutschman. Yeah. He was
he'd be a real great bright spot. He was up here.
I don't know what I was watching. No, I agree with him. I think Ryan Mountcastle. He showed out in the series. I mean, he ended up hitting, 417, so it's pretty damn good. He is the one guy 100% untouchable for me that's at the major league level right now that will be a part of the future. And to your point, Drew, I don't have, like, the crazy expectations of average with this guy. If this guy can end up being a 260 to 275 type hitter but hit 30 to 40 bombs every year, that's perfect. That's what we need. That's what we expected out of Chris Davis that didn't happen. If he can turn into that and then build around him with some of these other prospects that we have coming up, the future's bright with it. I really like Ryan Mountcastle. He's looked good so far.
Any bright spots for you, James, over the Tampa series?
You guys don't know, but anytime the Orioles play the Rays, I don't watch them. I can't stand it because most of the time we fucking lose. And it's just it's just awful to watch. They're either blowout games or they're close games. But for a team that I think that we should be able to beat or get more wins, we don't. So I tend not to watch it because I can't stand their stadium. If it's in Baltimore, you might get me to watch. But I feel like last year, every other week when I would be home and off, the fucking Rays will be playing the Orioles. I can't stand watch it. But also,
Netflix it is.
I would love to get more than two wins against the fucking Rays this year. That's all we had last year.
So, all right. So the other thing that I wanted to bring up, and some people are knocking this. I understand that. I understand both sides to it, right? For me, it is a bright spot. Opening day, John Means throws 84 pitches through four innings. Okay, now that number right there, you're like, what? You think he got rocked, right? Six hits, one run, one walk, five Ks. Not a bad
it
line.
It kind of came just down to like the third inning was it, runners
it was
on.
Exactly. There was one inning.
I can't remember the batter name for Tampa, but he didn't even get on, but he had a 10-pitch at-bat to end the second inning. And then it kind of carried over for the team for the third inning.
And what
it,
people need to understand
pitch count get up.
Is with and the it, shortened spring training, you're not going to trot these guys out and throw more. I was surprised to let them go 84, honestly. But you're not going to trot these guys out and let them throw more than 85, 90 pitches this early in the season, especially for a guy that's had struggles with soreness.
Yeah, there's,
you need to lengthen him out. Let him go out throughout the year. You don't have him go out and throw 100 pitches his first
and
outing.
Just to open it up from baseball perspective, like look around the league. I think there's – there was one player that had a perfect game going, and they pulled him in the fifth. Bundy had a start go into the fifth, but it was like, look, you're at 80 pitches, you're done. You Darvish, it's going to happen. I've told that Marvin at work. Like, my concept of how I view this first, probably even into May, like, it's going to be extended spring training.
Yeah.
It's almost going to be survival of the fittest. Who can, like, kind of get out there early and then maintain it all year? Or maybe one of these surprise teams pull off like looking really good and string it together for the whole year, because it's gonna be a lot of probably ugly baseball that don't make sense almost because it's spring training because of the stupid lockout.
Speaking of ugly baseball, the opportunities from this series Saturday, Jordan Lyles goes out, struggles, ending with a 9 ERA. After going five innings, giving up five runs, seven hits, three walks, only two Ks, and a homer.
He did go five innings, though.
Yeah, he went five innings. Well, yeah, you left him in to clean up his own shit is what you did.
Yeah.
And then Sunday, Tyler Wells gets rocked for four runs on three hits, two walks, two Ks, and a homer through just 1 2/3. So the pitching, we knew it was an opportunity coming in. We had all the question marks. What's going to happen? We're seeing things. They're testing it out. This is where they're going to be out here testing it out. They're seeing where they want guys. Now, Jordan Lyles, that's not what you brought Jordan Lyles. You paid Jordan Lyles a major league contract. Not a big major league contract, but you paid him a major league contract, and you expect to get major league results. That's not exactly what you want to see on the first outing.
I'll jump back to a little bit of the good, though, because, I mean, yeah, Sunday as a whole, it was 8-0 shutout. But the bullpen is actually, outside of that game, been really good.
Well, even in that game, Felix Bautista showed up.
Yeah, even in that game, I love watching him. It's going to be a ride with him because eventually you're going to have these games. You're like, what the hell? But then you can't forget like the five game outings before that probably that were really good.
Castro,
same kind of thing.
Or like you guys gave me shit. You're excited to see Felix Castro. Same thing.
I'd say it'd probably even be almost like Armando Benitez back in the day, like two really great years, and then it's just going to fall off. Yeah. But like, him. Lopez getting the save yesterday. With Lyles coming out, Keegan Aiken came in, three shutout innings.
Yeah.
They combined with a few, a handful of pitchers yesterday to close out the game. Stuff like that, like seeing that early on, at least, it's four games. We'll see whatever they do tonight. Like that kind of thing is, can the bullpen at least have a good first month while those starting pitchers or openers or the openers, whatever they do, that because like we said, like start pitching wise, especially for starting pitching, like it's going to be ugly for the first month.
It's definitely it's going to be rough for sure. One of the things that I wanted to get into was opening day, home opener yesterday. Great time out there, fun. It was great to see a 2-0 win over the Brewers. I wanted to kind of talk about the atmosphere for a few minutes. Drew, I know that you weren't there, but James, Fred, and myself were all there.
Don't have kids if you want to go to Orioles. I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
It was great to be back down there, down at Pickles. Fred, myself, Brian, and his wife, Jess, we all got down there early. Not as always want to because we had to turn around because I left my damn phone at home. So it's all my fault on that. But
wait a second, you were down celebrating the Pickles and had, then like sorry guys, I gotta go home.
No, we got on 95 and we didn't hit 152, so we were able to sweep back.
Okay,
but no,
I'd have been like fuck, phone's done.
Hey, at that point I would have probably too. But this was it was great to be down there. The atmosphere, Pickles started. It took a little bit longer than in years past, it felt like, but Pickles eventually got to be asses and elbows. It was deep in there. We got down there.
Back to how it used to be.
We got down there early enough that they actually had some tables set out. We were actually able to grab a picnic table right there. We posted up, and we stayed at that picnic table until we went into the stadium. We went into the stadium.
When you get there at 7 o'clock, you should be able to get a fucking table.
We went there. We were there.
We didn't get there until 9:45.
Yeah. Okay. I saw Fred's car at your house. So I was like,
that's always been my thing. Like, 1 year, like, I want to be able to go down there and get there at like 6 o'clock, and for the fan has a show down there. Yeah,
free 98 breakfast.
Rock has a show down. Like, I always want to do these bacon and beers and stuff like that. Like, even if like I would have been able to go, like it still wouldn't have been like I've never really had the chance. Like, I've gone to a lot of opening days. I used to have a 13 game plane where I used to go. I was going when they weren't wasn't the Buck years, right. when it was bad. You know what I mean? But it's just that atmosphere. No matter what, yeah, whatever's gonna happen the rest of the season happens the rest of the season. And granted, this wasn't a true opening day, but like that home opener is always, it's something special every time.
It's a time of the year that everybody loves to go down, and it's you know, to that point, it was asses and elbows. Fred, you know, you've been down there. You were down there last year at Pickles early. Atmosphere last year, atmosphere this year, night and day, right?
Oh, night and day. I mean, last year they had the whole social distancing thing going on down there. They had tables and they had high tops, and you couldn't be down in that area unless you were at a table or a high top, and it was all like assigned seating, just like if you're going into a restaurant. So it was very much more in Pickles like it was years ago. It's you know, asses to elbows at about 11 o'clock is what it was. It was a lot of fun, but here's my gripe, and I've got to talk about this. This has now happened 2 years in a row, and it really pisses me off because this is opening day, right? And this is the Orioles Super Bowl.
It's
this
a holiday.
Is their it's their holiday, right? 2 years in a row now. Last year and this year.
Are you gonna jump down the outline?
I'm jumping down the outline because this pisses me off. I can't get hold of myself.
I was gonna set you up for this shit.
Damn producers.
They fuck up the whole opening day ceremonies yet again. 2 years in a row where they're doing the introduction video. The introduction video, if you've ever been to a Ravens game before, you know they have the intro video that comes on prior to player introductions that gets everybody amped up.
You mean like, kind of like our intro?
Yeah, it gets you pumped up, right, for what's about to happen. Well, they have an intro video come on, no audio. The audio for Rob Long is off yet again.
Now, hold on a second. I'm gonna argue with that point for just a quick second because Rob Long, he's still working at this. He was literally reading the script the entire time. So, Rob, I love you, man, but you got to memorize some of this stuff. Now, who knows if they got it to him late last minute? Who knows? But, dude, put the microphone up to your face a little bit. But you're holding the microphone way down here. You got to put that thing up there, dude, so we can hear you.
My problem with this isn't that. The problem is this is opening day. You had plenty of time to rehearse, practice, and get this right. If the problem was Rob, whether it was the audio or not, if the problem was Rob, he had time to prepare for this.
And Christ, it's only one day where you do this exact ceremony. You're not doing it later on.
And it's the same ceremony that they've been doing for 20-plus years now. The orange carpet, bring them down the center field line, announce their names. How hard is it to get this right?
Hold on a second. They can't even roll out and roll up the orange carpet, right?
Yeah.
Every year it's a fucking...
Oh, and I guess there was a budget cut because there wasn't the balloons that are usually riding down the fucking carpet. Like,
it's an air compressor.
It felt cheap. It felt bad. And, you know, I've gone to minor league games that put on better audio-video performances than that. This is the majors. Get the shit right.
I'm glad you brought that up, right? Because there's a lot of things that happen here, and you didn't even get into all of them, right? Not only did you have Rob and those issues, right? You had the late flyover after the national anthem that was literally a minute late. It was a minute. Yeah. Rob Long was literally in the intro piece for the Silver Slugger Award to Cedric Mullins, and then the planes fly over.
Yeah, I see people joke on Twitter like that wasn't meant for the flyover. The flyover was for Mullins and the Silver Slugger.
It was like, what the hell?
So yeah, I missed all that.
From a fan's perspective, literally, we walked over to the entrance within... We were there about no later than 2 minutes before the gates opened.
Yeah.
We were standing in line. Gates open. We walk in, around, go to the bathroom. Within 5 minutes of opening.
No paper towels. It's opening day.
Mind you, all the people that are scanning tickets are senior citizens, and none of them knew how to use the Apple scanner at all. None of them.
I didn't think he was going to get in.
It was so bad.
Even Android users know how to use that shit. Come on.
Let me just tell you some other thing. Number one, they don't open all the gates.
So they originally announced they were going to open 3, but then they opened gate F as 4 because of the pickles.
What pisses me off because I miss all what you guys are saying because I can't get in the fucking line. I get through the line. And second off, what pisses me off, there's a sign that says no backpacks. I fucking get it. But you allow all these people to bring your own food in. You think they're going to put it all like in a little Ziploc bag?
Yes.
And all that? So they have a big bag. So now they tell you they have lockers. I don't know if you saw. They have lockers by the numbers.
They've always had them.
So... Well, I never came in that side because normally you can get into other things, but I couldn't get in because there was a fucking line. But Kelly had like a little purse book bag, this big. All of us, 7 of us, all of us get through. She's the last one. They're like, you can't bring that in. And she's like, James, because I'm ahead to where they're going to scan the ticket. I'm like, what? They won't let me bring that in. I said, why can't she bring this in? It's a purse. It's not even like she's carrying it. It's around her bag. Like, Doesn't stick out. It's like this
you
fucking
can look
bag.
At it. Here, look at it. If you want to search through it, go ahead. Yeah,
I told the guy that you just let that lady in with the fucking cooler into the stadium, and you worried about that. So we finally get through. The guy's calling for a supervisor. Some guy behind her that's waiting is like, just go. So she just goes through. I wait. The guy turns around. He's like, just go, you know, but you shouldn't have it. I was like, why? So then I get excited about buying new merchandise. I go into the team store. They give me a fucking bag. This fucking bag.
Bigger than the purse you took in.
Shit that literally her purse could fit in there, and you're worried about a goddamn fucking bag.
Yeah.
Hold on. This is the last. Celebrating 30 years in the fucking business being open. All the balls, team balls, no logos on them.
Nope.
No opening day, just a regular fucking ball. Come on, Orioles.
Yeah.
Put some fucking money out there.
There was a lot of stuff, you know, the balls that got thrown up, a lot of people were expecting just like the 25th anniversary ball. Everybody remember that? Several years back, it was every game ball used had 25th anniversary. They are not doing that for 30th anniversary this year. The other thing, right, we talked about that. We talked about the poor AV. So one of the things they did this year was they introduced, and you weren't there for this, but they introduced.
Okay, Scott, I know. I wasn't at the game, damn it.
They introduced new in-game in-game hosts.
Yeah, this caught me off guard because I didn't even know that was like going to happen.
Nobody did.
I still don't even know what that means. So please tell me what that means because I was so confused.
So you know when you go to minor,
that's what I equated it to.
The minor league games, how they have
corny,
the person that's
minors. That's fine.
The minor league piece where it's the host that's like during innings trivia, all this. That's what it is.
Yeah.
So. To an extent.
Picked a song for the
But to my point, none of their fucking mics worked. The girl's mic, you could see she was getting frustrated on the screen. She was like, oh my God,
here's the worst part about this. Her mic didn't work during the intros.
I fucking quit right then and there.
They go over 4 innings later. Her mic's still not working. You didn't think to test that fucking mic before you handed it back to her, assholes? Man, come on.
Exactly.
Friend, I run a show.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Not a good way to get more asses in the seats. This is a day. This is a game you cannot fuck up. You have to get this right.
Well,
if you're going to have – when's the next time the Orioles are going to have 40-plus thousand people in the stands? It's not going to happen. Not until they're in the playoff hunt again.
You're fucking funny. 44,000 fans. I'm going on a goddamn rant here.
Sellout doesn't mean physical bodies. I mean,
no, they said
yours is a sellout. If you didn't go to the game, your tickets still count because it was sold.
Here's what I'm going to tell you.
I agree with everything you're going to say.
Here's what I'm going to tell you. You sit there and you say sellout, but then you say. The recorded attendance. That is a different terminology. It's a different use. Don't sit here and fucking lie. 44,000? Bullshit. There was no more than 30,000 fucking people in those stands. The entire upper deck was half seating, if that. The lower bowl was probably 75, maybe 80%. There were still a ton of empty seats. It was fucking ridiculous. It was a fucking joke. I'm so used to everybody going down there, and it is a party. Right? But the problem is Orioles fans, if it's not exciting, I'm not going. So the only day I'm going to go is opening day. We didn't even fucking show up there.
Fuck that up.
So guess what? This is where I take that whole stance. Don't fucking show up if they ever get to the playoffs the next 3 years.
Did you get your
magnet? They didn't give them out.
Exactly. They said on their promotion things that magnets were going to be given out.
That's going to make me cry.
They didn't get my fucking magnet.
So it's bad. But look, there were some things that were some bright spots.
So
well, they missed an exciting game. I mean, they ended up winning.
So at least they won. So the only thing hearing all this shit almost makes me want to weep. be glad I wasn't there. So the big elephant in the roomish details. What how'd you like the wall? Would the wall look cool? Is it gonna grow on you? Thoughts in general.
There's a lot to digest with the wall. And one of the things that I didn't really think about until we got there, until we saw it, was the front row there that sits right behind the wall is now on a more even playing field with the wall. So there's going to be a lot more fans reaching over and potentially interfering with balls.
Instead of it being like nose high, it's like chest high.
It's chest high. So there's going to be a lot of fans interfering. That was one thing.
And there's no like way of determining like the yellow on the top.
No, nothing. I mean, it's literally just wall.
I think it's starting to be around the
same as there
was before. I think around the let's look kind of a league thing though. You're seeing like less of the yellow distinguishment.
I mean, there won't be fan-to-player interference because no player's going to be able to jump that high. But as far as reaching over the fence and interfering with the ball, that should have been a double or a triple.
Still Jeffrey Mayer.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot. Yeah, exactly. the other part of it was everything I said about the wall looking kind of cheap and looking phony was confirmed. As Scott and I were talking about, the top portion weren't aligned right. It just looked cheaply done. It looked like a minor league stadium.
It looked rushed.
It looked rushed.
It felt like maybe even less than 2 weeks ago, the padding wasn't up yet.
Oh, this time they had the padding up, the numbers were up, and you had the logo, the advertisements up. But to Fred's point, I was talking about this. I got down there and I was looking because I was looking, okay, where are the numbers at? So I always used to give people 364. Four rows behind the numbers 364, you'll find me and my dad and my son. With the three of us there, you always see us. But now it's like, okay, what reference do I give people? Okay, look one section over from the numbers 398. Okay, look section over. But I got down there and I'm looking, and I look along the wall. There's shit that's sticking out on one side. There's one that was over near where you were sitting that was literally cockeyed. It was bad. It was rushed. It looked bad. I hope they fix it because it did look bad.
That wall's going to change like 4 or 5 times within years.
I'm sure it will.
Here's the other thing that I didn't kind of like about it either was the fact that like when you're standing up, we didn't get a chance to see what an actual home run in game would feel like because nobody hit it that far out or even a double off the wall.
I got more on that in a second.
But I stood up just to try to get a perspective of like, okay, if a home run was coming to me, what would I actually see, right? You don't see about 10 to 15 feet in front of the warning track. Yeah. So you're going to have no idea if the sound of a thud is a player catching the ball, running into the wall, if it's the ball hitting off the wall. You'll have no perspective of that. You'll have to watch it on the video board if you're sitting there to have an idea what's going on.
Yeah. If they replay
and that's, right.
So that's the other thing, too, right, from my seats, watching shots like that. Now it's rough to see where I was sitting. And people were obviously sitting there before, but it was their perspective. But for me, my perspective was force changed. So now I've got to get used to, I've got to literally like look around and over people and around the fence to see the ball that Cedric Mullins caught out in center field. I barely see that, right? Then you have the fact that during batting practice, this will tell you something. During batting practice, you want to know how many home runs the Milwaukee Brewers hit out to left field?
20.
Two.
Yeah.
Literally two.
Exactly. One went two rows over my head.
Yeah, one went two rows over his head. The other one was two sections over.
They try to keep them in. They tell the players, try not to hit them out anymore.
Nah, I don't know about that.
But the thing is, real quick, getting back to the game, I think it was the seventh.
We haven't gotten to the game yet.
No, but the seventh or eighth inning. When that ball hit off the net, should that guy gone to second?
Right, we had this discussion.
I'm going to get into this in a second. Let's come back. We'll come back to that in just a minute.
Because that pissed me off.
But again, so you know, impressions of the new wall. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays into account. We also really didn't. The only thing we did see is it seemed like what should have been a long single or the chance to hold a guy to a long single. Hayes had to go a little deeper into the corner to get the ball on a ball down the line. It wound up being a double.
Yeah, you're going to have a lot of sack flies. this year.
Yeah, so
I was thinking about that in general because I'm like, how many times, like, even a, I mean, the old warning track, yeah, it's still probably possible, really fast guy, but like, almost now, like if it hits that warning track now, it doesn't matter your speed.
Well,
like,
Hayes,
you should be able to fucking score.
I will tell you this: Hayes' distance from the wall didn't change.
Yeah,
his distance from the infield changed. Mm-hmm. Seti Mall was actually playing a little bit more shaded to him because I think the plan. Well, you could see Seti Mall's. He was playing deep. Seti Mall's was playing a little bit more shallow. Because Seti's got to help try to cut those off. We did see it one time where it came into play. It was a fly ball. If Seti didn't get to it as quick as he did, didn't have the speed, it would have been a double.
Yeah.
The importance of a strong arm in left field is going to be much more important.
Yeah, and also the cutoff. He has to come out further now.
Right. Yeah, he's got to come out further. So, but overall, those are kind of the things that we wanted to get through and kind of talk about. Again, there's a lot of things. The Silver Slugger Award was pretty cool. Overall, I did just want to kind of share this for a quick second. And I'll take my sunglasses off for this because this is a little bit of a serious moment for me. I've been to 30 opening days now in a row. I don't know what it was, despite all the issues with the AV and all that stuff. Something about this one just hit different for me. Like, I felt myself at different times with some of the videos, the stuff playing on the video board. You're right. They didn't have any fucking music.
Right.
But I knew what the moments were. I knew where every one of those moments at Camden Yards, I knew where I was.
Yeah.
And so it kind of just played through my mind and sitting there with my dad and, you know, knowing that these are his season tickets, that we've been there for 30 years and there was one that he missed. And I know what that felt like. And it was so hard and, you know, kind of going through and feeling the emotion this is an opening day. I, you know, you can attest to this. I didn't really drink a lot.
Yeah, no. I drank for you.
Yeah, you did.
I didn't drink at a lot of opening days either because of
I used to drink down a lot of Pickles, but I had two beers at Pickles.
Yeah, I never did it on opening days. Just play more games in the game.
I would have two beers at Pickles, and usually I would have, you know, I don't know, three or four during the game. I had two beers at Pickle and one beer during the game. And it was just, there was something about this one that just, it just hit different. I don't know how to describe it, but I think it was just all the changes, the fact that this stadium has been around for 30 years, all of us have experienced this stadium. I mean, think about that. If you put that in perspective for yourself, each of us is going to look at it differently. But you've been experiencing baseball at that stadium for 30 years. It's something to take in. It's something to think about. Think about how that stadium, not just all the moments, but think about the how that stadium has evolved and changed.
Yeah.
Right? And then to see, for me, one of the things that hurt is the whole Dempsey's fucking situation. Dempsey's is still closed, guys. This is one guy that was so impactful into our organization, and the Orioles are sitting here treating him like shit.
Yeah.
To the fact that he's going, I don't want to fucking open that thing again. And you have an opportunity to maybe put somebody else in there. You don't do it. You fuck up the AV, right? All those fuck-ups, the emotions that are there, but I think that's what made it all that more emotional is seeing the history behind the stadium and see how much this is, what this meant to the stadium, to this organization, and to this fan base, and you fuck it up as bad as you did.
And that's why I had such a problem with it, Scott. As emotional as you are about this whole thing, you understood because you're a super fan. You've been there for 30-plus years in a row, right? That's what every fan, including the young fans, should have been able to feel and should have been able to experience through watching that video, through having that soundtrack lined up with it. These are simple things that they just can't screw up. I'm sorry to keep hitting on this, but it's a part of the game. It's part of the experience. And if you're trying to put more asses in the seats, you're trying to appeal to a younger fan base, you can't miss on these type of opportunities. No. And to me, it felt half-assed.
It did.
The whole thing just felt half-assed.
It did. It was definitely rough, you know, and it's, again, a lot of emotion. I took my sunglasses off because I felt myself at times during all of that, like, welling up at times or feeling a different way, feeling a different something, right? The excitement was there, but it was raw emotion, and that's kind of where it was. Go ahead, James.
To get into my rant, and you guys, well, Scott didn't see it, but Drew and Fred saw it in Vegas. Opening day, you know it's going to be a lot of people there.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have to miss 3-4 innings to get fucking food of a hot dog that's already made. No one moves. Everybody, it's like on their own time. They don't take cash anymore. Boom, put a card in there. Let's go. You have all these people that the food's already made. All you got to do is put it together. I missed 3 innings waiting on food because of how slow they are.
Yeah, it's
bad. I'm sorry. Like, you need to move your ass.
That's
the TVs inside there fucking suck. They replaced them. They still fucking suck.
I'll tell you this, though, right? Like, and it's no defense, but we all work in different industries, and it's everywhere. It's the same problem right now. Everybody wants more money and wants to do less fucking work. So, unfortunately, you get situations like this where they just go, hire the fucking body.
Yeah, you stole it.
You hire a fucking body just so that you can have somebody there and taking 5 minutes to get a hot dog to somebody.
I can tell you an organization that doesn't get it wrong, and that's the Ravens. They do everything right with all of it.
I'm not denying that, right?
I wouldn't even be defending. I feel the same way you're feeling. Like, it's just kind of how it is since the pandemic started.
Here's what I'm going to tell you. Let's just make sure. And I don't think you're wrong. I'll say this. Nah. I don't think you're wrong. But let's make sure, because remember, they're both run by the same company, Delaware North Sports Group or Delaware North Food Group. So here's the deal.
It's Amark.
No, it's Delaware North.
Yeah, but it's Amark people that work there.
Amark hasn't been there for 3 years.
No, but they have people that work for Delaware North, runs the thing, but Amark still have people
right
there.
Well, let's make sure
Fred's right, but I tell you what, those computers are all, and I have worked and seen it. All you got to do is hit a button, hot dog, Coke. It's all programmed. It's dummy proof. All you got to do is hit and go. And now that they don't take cash,
you don't have to count money.
I'm not denying any of that. What I'm saying is it's in an industry. I work in an industry right now where we're fucking struggling to hire people. And so sometimes you go, well, we need to open it, so let's just get a fucking body.
All right.
So that's what you do. So
let's go back to the game. All that sucked, but they fucking won 2-0. Right, let's get back to that.
Which, ironically, it's the score that they won by.
Which is so crazy.
When they opened the stadium in 92 on April 6th against the Cleveland Indians. Okay.
Yeah, they weren't the Guardians. Indians. Everyone's still saying Indians. No, yeah. I've heard so many. And I'm not even talking about like Joe Schmoes. Like, anybody on these other networks and stuff, it's still hard to say.
Everybody
Guardians
slips every once in a while. So, but the game itself obviously won 2-0. Offensively, standouts. Santander goes 2-for-2 with 2 walks in this game. Not only good with the bat, but being patient with his at-bats. Yeah. Good to see. Great to see. Your boy, Ceddie Mull, 1-for-5 at the plate with 2 strikeouts, but he had the 2 RBIs of the game.
Came through in the clutch.
Second inning, a 2-run single. And I tell you what, I think somebody said it in there with Mateo being patient, but God damn, that guy's fast.
Yeah, he's fast. Yes. And I tell you, that moment for me, I'm not going to say that it was right up there with like the Delman Young, but it had that energy. The stadium was rocking when he scored.
Yeah,
it was that explosive. I haven't felt that at Camden Yards probably since then.
Yeah.
And it was good to see. It was good to feel. You could see the players when you watched the video back, how pumped up they were.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it was just a good feeling. Once that game started and all the other bullshit went out the window, man, it felt good.
But this lineup, including Ceddie Mull and one of his outs, they were hitting the ball hard. It was just two people. They had 2 liners right back at the pitchers.
The Mancini one.
Golden gloves.
Feels wrong. Yeah.
Golden gloves.
Yeah, the guy in center is playing damn good.
Yeah.
The guy in center was good as well.
Tyrone Taylor.
Yeah. Pitching wise, Zimmerman looked good. Gave up no runs and 3 hits on 2 walks and 4 strikeouts through 4 innings. Only 66 pitches, pitch total.
I got a story for you on Zimmerman and why I think this is so cool, right? Because we talk about like the little things that you look for in a storyline, you know, to feel good about. Zimmerman's obviously a local kid. He played college ball at Towson. Well, I mean, he talked about like how important this game was. That he said that this opening day start was bigger for him than his major league debut. So much that he talked about like he went out the night before the game in the dark without any lights on, walked the stadium just to get a feel and try to envision what this game was going to be like for him. That's good shit, man. And to go out there
movie-esque
and to throw like he did. I mean, he listen, he didn't go deep, but that was because they were innings counting him and pitch count counting him. But he looked good and did his job.
All three,
kudos to Zimmerman.
All three pitches well. The curveball, the changeup, the fastball, they were all working well. He hit about 95, 96 on the gun with the fastball, the changeup, and the curveball have guys all speed. It worked well. Bauman worked well. Bauman
looked real good.
Comes in, gives up one hit, one walk, three Ks through two and a third. Pretty good start there. Situation
touched 98.
Touched 98, times. Yeah. The other guy touched 98.
Yeah, he's a guy that feels like the pen probably suits him because you can ramp it up and you're not seeing the lineup multiple times.
A Lopez comes in for the save. One walk, one K through an inning pitch. It looked good. Overall, a great game. A lot to be happy about with this lineup, with these players, and the way that they performed on home opening day. Obviously, we talked about the struggles down in Tampa, but for a home opener, and James, you know, bringing up the Seti Mull hitting a grand slam, you know, the home field, they're feeling it right now. They're riding high, and let them keep doing it. I'm fine with that. These guys are young, and that's one of the things that Brandon Hyde talked about after the game. I don't know if you guys saw his press conference, but he literally read down the lineup. He's like, he was in the minors last year. He was in the minors last year. He was in the minors last year. He's been with like two teams in the minors, but he started his debut. He literally was running down and going, these guys are young. You got to remember that.
Real quick, and I want to see your guys' opinion on this too. Adit had brought up earlier Mateo. You mentioned Mateo, right? From what I've seen so far, and at least it's only been four games, right? His batting eye seems to be a little bit better.
He's more
than
patient.
It's been.
He's not
pushing
it. His discipline's
better. His patience is better. And with his type of speed, man, if he can increase that on base percentage, it's going to do nothing but good for this team.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, he's the epitome of what, I mean, whether it still takes some getting used to for us with the left field. Elias explained, like, that's we're going to be thinking about getting that ball in the gap more and having runners like Mateo take advantage of that and shit, like being able to leg out triples. Who knows how the way that damn left field's going.
Here's the thing. Right. He scored from second on a routine line drive
to
center field.
I was amazed by that because it.
And a great throw to home plate, by the way.
I was listening on the. Yeah, it was. I was listening on the radio. So it just, to me, when that's happening, it's like, it didn't, you know what I mean? Like, it sounded like, oh, okay, well, that's a sing. And then, like, he scored. Like, he didn't really get the full chasm of what happened. Then I saw the video later in the evening. I'm like, holy shit. Like, how did you score from that? Like, you should have scored. Like, no one should have scored. And you did that, you know, that thing to the side. You get your hand in. It was perfect.
Yeah, it was great. Well, but we talk about these young guys. Let's take a quick look at what's going down on the farm system. Fred, take us through Norfolk. What's going on down there?
So Norfolk right now off to a 3-3 start. You know, Grayson Rodriguez, obviously the big name down there. Everybody's keeping an eye on. Makes a fantastic AAA debut. Four innings pitch, seven Ks, one hit, one walk each. Looked really, really solid in his
line. That ball's got movement, man.
I can't wait, man.
It's in the middle of the zone, and it goes down, and they don't have a chance.
Yeah, it's hard for me to say, like, who I anticipate their debut more, Grayson or Adley, because they're like 1A, 1A for me. You know, it's hard for me to pick one. But you got Smith and Bromvich down there pitching well. Need to cut down on the walks a little bit. Diaz. Finally, you know, we've been asking for him to just wake
of
up.
Of all times to start looking like a threat.
Hit a couple home runs down there, and Robert Nystrom added a couple home runs as well. Okay. So that's a guy that we think could fit well, especially with that short porch in right field. So, again, off to a 3-3 start, but a lot of big things going on down in AAA right
now. How about down at Bowie?
I mean, theirs was a little bit shakier. I mean, Norfolk had six games already under the belt because they started the beginning of the week. So Bowie and Aberdeen only had a three-game set. So it was a 1-2 start. But Jordan Westberg, right out the gate, he's got two home runs, batting .385. Hudson Haskins is one of those guys. Like, maybe he could be like a Nystrom by the end of the year where you're right. I like what I've seen. I've seen these videos. Three homer day on Sunday.
I mean, three or four. With
one
three
way or the other. Minors, it doesn't matter. That's a three homer game. You don't take that away from anybody. So at least makes you think like there's another guy that at least shows a little promise now.
He's got what, seven hits and six of them are extra base hits.
So three homers, three doubles to go out of his out of his seven hits on the season. Joey Ortiz at the bat, he only has a triple and a single, but he's showing off the leather, and he's fast. Yeah. So the other one that piques your interest. So I'll get back to this guy. A guy, I thought of something. So a guy like the guys like Bradish and DL Hall are still kind of on that extended spring training.
Yeah.
So you might not see stats from guys like them yet, but I mean it's coming.
Yep.
That's just another one of those things. We'll be like a dead horse. You didn't have a real spring training off season, let alone. So
well, more,
you have those issues
more,
with those
more
guys.
More feedback for them is important right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, exactly. And just trying to work yourself. But we talked last week about the Cole Saucer and what's the other guy?
Oh,
the trade to Miami.
Tanner Scott.
They traded those guys, and it was kind of like, what is that for? Well, one of the pieces they got back from them was Antonio Velez.
Yeah.
And only four innings, you know what I mean? It is what it is. I think it's what you're going to expect from these minor league guys, especially a guy like him. But across the four innings, seven Ks, I've seen him. It's like it is another one of those movements. It's like how I'm looking at the ball here, and then all of a sudden, like it just dips, and the guys are completely whiffing. A couple walks, but only a couple hits across those four innings. And like seven
Not
Ks.
Not a bad line.
Throwing the Ks up there because some 40. Of the other guys, like – like Brnovich, Smith, even Bradish, like they're more of like the pitchers, not the the hurlers like Grayson and DL. Yeah. So, it you know, that's off. Gunnar Henderson, at least a little bit of negative. Gunnar Henderson did have a slow start.
Yeah.
But I'm not too worried about it because, I mean, when he was.
He's a streaky hitter.
Streaky hitter. When he started off in Aberdeen last year, it was a little quiet, and he got there. And they put him in the buoys, the same thing.
It takes him a little bit time to make adjustments.
Great. It happened in Norfolk, same like everything where he was at. It, so I'm not too worried about him.
Yeah. You know? Well, Aberdeen started off 3-0 this season as well, and for them, you know, that's the Kobe Mayo crew show down there right now.
Yeah, the Bahamas first at bat.
Exactly.
Yeah, they've had. I mean, that was like a lot of offense, like. One game
they've,
was in the team.
They're gonna be
like,
fun to watch.
They've looked good. I know that you know you guys are talking about trying to go. Yeah. We'll see if I'm able to go. We're definitely gonna try to make some outings to the minor league games this year. I think there's gonna be a lot of guys that we're gonna be having our eyes on, and that we're all gonna be getting excited about to kind of go through. Any more questions before we move on?
Yeah. So Adit brings up a good one. He says Orioles rotation at the end of the year means Lyle Zimmerman, Grayson, DL, Bradish, Tyler Wells. What do you guys think? To me, if Grayson, DL, and Bradish are here at the end of the year, man, that's all signs are pointing good.
Yeah. Tyler Wells, for me, would probably be the big question mark there. He had some struggles at times last year, and his first outing this year, we see struggles. I need to see him make the adjustment and rebound from it well because he was so up and down. Sometimes he would rebound well. Sometimes he wouldn't after a bad start. He needs to get more consistent. I honestly think – I don't know that – I'm sorry to say this. I don't know that he deserves to be here right now.
Nah, I'd have Zimmerman as my five.
Yeah.
With that lineup, I'd have Zimmerman as my five right now.
Yeah, so we'll kind of see what happens. But that's a good point. By the end of the year, that's exactly what we could be looking at. We could be looking at the future starting rotation for the Orioles by the end of the year. So really excited to kind of get into that. All right, it is time for this week's rundown. And this week we got a kind of a hodgepodge of topics, but Fred, I'll let you start with the interesting ones that there was a lot that had to be said.
Yeah, and some really, honestly, just kind of shocking, especially when I first heard it, almost breathtaking, but absolutely tragic news. Former Ohio State star quarterback Dwayne Haskins passed away over the weekend. Details are kind of wishy-washy as far as what actually happened. Just social media, everything's all over the place with it right now. But end of the story, he was tragically hit by an oncoming dump truck, first reported, trying to cross interstate down in South Florida. My problem with this is there's been a lot of tasteless comments made about the situation all over social media, including at ESPN's Adam Scheffler, which I know he's since put out a public apology and an audio clip through his social media accounts and all of that. But if you haven't heard Gil Brandt go on his rant on NFL radio, well, just listen to this.
Well, you know, Dan, I hate any time anybody is killed or anybody dies. But he was a guy that was living to be dead, so to speak.
First mistake.
You know, they told him, don't under any circumstances leave school early. You just don't have the work habits. You don't have this. You don't have that. What did he do? Left school early. I always can remember this. we invited players to the draft. And he was one of the players we invited to the draft. And we were told, no, we're going to have our own party. His own party was a party at the bowling alley. Charged him $50 to get into the bowling alley for his party. It was always something, you know. It's one of those things. I'm never offside, but they keep calling me for offside. Is what it is. So, you know, it's a tragic thing. Anytime anybody dies, it's tragic. And especially when you're 24 years old and you got your whole life ahead of you. You know, maybe if he'd have stayed in school a year, he wouldn't do silly things. I mean, when you're jogging on a highway, you know, on a road like that, that leaves it open because I tell you, it's so. Guy has two drinks and he's just a little bit to the right side of the road and gets hit and killed. It's easy to happen.
Yeah. Now, a couple things you should know. This kind of classist and downright fucked up comments this is not a first for Gil, right? Like, this has happened. But Gil's also 90 years old and maybe, call me crazy, but maybe shouldn't be speaking publicly on air any longer. I don't know. He's 90 years old. Why is this guy still given a fucking platform? I mean, just absolutely no empathy or compassion, completely insensitive and disrespectful, on top of just a completely terrible take that nothing correlates. He was a guy that was living to be dead. What does having
heard that term,
getting
like
hit by a fucking dump truck have to do with this guy wasn't selling drugs, this guy wasn't doing anything, you know, arrested, how doing about anything dumb?
They're calling me for offsides and I'm offside.
What does that even fucking mean?
What? How is a quarterback offsides? Was he lining up a safety?
It's always something with this guy. What the fuck? I mean, okay, maybe if you don't agree with some of the decisions that he made with like not staying in school and all that stuff, you can make that argument as far as a decision goes, but it has nothing to do with this guy tragically losing his life, getting hit by a dump truck. Like, it's just, I hate this fucking guy. I hate that they give this type of person a platform, and he should be losing his job. If the NFL doesn't, man, then something's wrong.
Don't disagree there.
My thing is, I didn't have a problem with Adam Scheffler. Like, the wording was, there was nothing that was wrong with
His tweet was accurate. It was just not sensitive. It wasn't the right time to use the wording that he used. There's a million of other ways that he could have said what he said without saying struggling to catch on with a Ross. I'm not saying what he said was
accurate.
It was
only like the second sentence. You couldn't describe anything else besides the fact that he didn't catch on in a shitty organization.
Right. To James's point, though, you told me about it. I have still yet to see that that tweet. I've still yet to see the tweet with my eyes that said the word struggling.
I posted it in the group.
Yeah. I didn't see the struggling thing.
I saw it.
Struggle to catch on. Like,
see that.
There was nothing that he was lying about. He told me he was a great.
It's not that it was inaccurate. It wasn't the time for that.
To call a guy struggling.
And it's a guy that's had a lot of questionable.
Why didn't you pick the fact that he does all these good things in the community? Why did you pick the fact that he struggled to catch on to my point is, it just wasn't the right time for it. Not that it was inaccurate, it just wasn't the right time for it.
James, what's your rundown topic this week?
Mine's still on football as well, but it's the USFL League that is starting up. And it's like what the NFL always learns from these other groups like XFL. Now, they're going to be using a football with a chip in it, and instead of using chains to find out if it's a first down, which most of the time you can see if it's a first down or not, but if it's close, they basically use sort of like in tennis, like when a ball is called out and they say, hey, replay it, and you can see like where the ball lands on the mark. It's sort of going to be that technology. They'll be able to see it real quick, get down there and say, hey, it's not first down or first down, and move on, which I saw a clip of the trailer. It looks brilliant. I hope the NFL does it because we all have seen it where a guy has gotten a first down, and the way that they place the ball.
Gene Steratore brought out the goddamn index card.
Where they place the ball is like, dude, that ball was clearly over a first down. They move it back a foot, or it was a first down, and they put like inches back.
What do you know? A successful sport figuring out ways to make their sport more successful and appealing to the masses.
MLB.
And it's going to speed it up where you'll have two guys running down with their chain. And it amazes me how they have to call their own timeout, official timeout, and bring a chain from one side of the field to the other instead of just having another chain on the other side of the field to use. They have to bring it from the other side of the field, which I have never gotten. But so hopefully this new technology catch on and the NFL can learn from this and speed up the game.
All right, Drew, what do you got this week?
Take it to the Nationals. The news broke on the Washington Post on Monday that the Learners had – I'm glad I kind of read the article because it sounded like when you read, if you only see headlines, the headline reads like Learner family positioning to sell the team.
Yeah.
Pretty much. And that's not necessarily the case in reading the article. So Ted Learner is the initial owner. It's kind of like a situation with the Orioles where Peter Angelos was the owner, but ownership has shifted to John. In this case, it had shifted to his son, and even then, it's like it's pretty much a conglomerate of people running operations, and right. You know, to the wife, to his, to, you know, the son's wife, and this, that, and the other. So they're at a position where they're thinking about either selling the team or even having a situation where they have, you know, bring in partners. And, you know, maybe there's like a Ted Leonsis or something that could sit there and, you know, they would have like 51%, Leonsis would have 49%, stuff like that. I felt like bringing it up because it's one thing that, like, you're tied to them one way or the other, because for years now we've been dealing with the Masson dispute and wanting more money from the Masson and this, that, and the other. When they bought it from Major League Baseball 16 years ago, you signed a contract that said, like, look, you know, all the revenue is coming from the Orioles, like Masson, like that's, you know, they wanted this bigger piece of the pie, but that's not the deal you signed. And it's always been bullshit with the MLB, not, you know, oh yeah, well, we'll side with the Learners. Well, no, like, this is the deal that was signed. It doesn't matter. And the Orioles should have never.
A bad contract is a bad contract. You're responsible.
It doesn't fucking matter. Like, you wanted a team, and I've been reading the article because I guess I didn't really know when they bought the team, as my, you know, knowledge wasn't as high. When they bought the team, they were just so happy to have a team. Like, they had tried to buy the then Redskins in 99 before Snyder did. So it reeks of desperation. They wanted to have a franchise in Washington, and that's cool. But, you know, later on we go through the whole dispute. So I'll stop there because it is what it is. But it just goes to show, like, you know, you wanted a franchise, and now it's kind of almost like we've gone through this whole dispute, and now you're kind of like either ready to pull out altogether or like kind of wash your hands of it and let someone else deal with it while you still have some kind of control.
Yeah.
It just reeks of kind of business bullshit, but that's
does,
my take a little
it
bit.
It does, but it kind of goes into mine a little bit because, you know, you talk about all those things and them trying to get out, right? They did make the Nationals a fairly successful organization, right? This is a team that not too many years ago won a national championship. They won the World Series. They were World Series champions. All right. So high team. This the value of this team from when they first bought it to now skyrocketed. Huge difference.
Yeah, it went from like $450 million. They paid $450 million to buy it, and it's now worth $2
billion. Okay. What in DC is real low value right now? Well, here's the deal, NFL. Get Dan Snyder the fuck out already. All right? The news today from the Associated Press, if you haven't heard it, hear it now. I'm going to basically kind of read, and I'll summarize in a sense. The U.S. House Oversight Committee sent a letter to the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission. They apparently have found evidence NFL's commanders have engaged in unlawful financial conduct. Surprise, surprise. In the letter obtained by the Associated Press, the committee said the team withheld ticket revenue from visiting teams and refundable ticket deposits from season ticket holders. The committee said email documents and statements made by former employees indicate executives and Dan Snyder engaged in, quote, troubling, long-running, and potentially unlawful pattern of financial conduct. One former employee also testified saying that they know that there were two separate books, a book with unreported ticket revenue and the one that was handed over to the NFL. How fucking shitty is that? Right? According to testimony, Snyder was aware of the numbers with the league, with also paying privy to the actual while also being privy to the actual data and the business practice. They even had a name for it. It was called juicing. How the fuck is this allowed to be happening? Right? This continues to be a problem, which sets up the Lerner story. There are some people on social media that are saying the Lerners selling the Nats high
so they can get the
get in on the low value what they originally wanted to then turn around that organization because they know FedEx Field is they've been quoted Ted Lerner before it had been quoted as saying FedEx Field is a piece of shit. We all know that.
We've seen the sewage spill and water spill a couple of times.
The attendants around it said they can leave.
Right, and that's the thing is one of the things that this kind of comes into play is these two stories really kind of go together.
It kind of makes sense because that's – and even I delved into it while reading the post, and maybe it's more opinion than being – I won't say I'm necessarily right, but if you look at
it's
last
– all BS opinion. That's all it says.
But my point being, like, you look at everyone kind of – when you look at stuff like the Orioles do, you kind of like, oh, well, you lower this payroll super low, or you know what I mean, blah, 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 and that's – They bought their World Series. That's cool. They made the World Series. But now you saw, like, in the last offseason, granted, Scherzer was a little bit older, and you could see him moving on. But they had that huge deal where they sent Scherzer and a young guy that was still a controllable piece in Trey Turner, and he's gone. Like, there's other controllable pieces that are gone. Like, the only piece that's still there is Soto.
Yeah.
So it's like, it almost, yeah. Maybe
and how long before they trade is it?
Yeah, you know, they offer him a contract.
You lower down the assets and try to sell higher.
But my thing, Scott, is how much shit do Dan Snyder needs to be in where he can't move for the NFL to say, sell the fucking
That's
team?
That's my point. At like, some Jesus point, the NFL Christ, needs man. To step in and say,
Email,
you are.
Sex harassment. Like, what?
Exactly.
How's this guy
and
still
the only one, the only
owner.
One that got thrown under the
it's
bus.
It's a poor
was,
representation of the league.
No, well, Gruden. Gruden's the only one that's caught any flack from that whole thing.
Well, something doesn't smell right down there.
It's all definitely bad. Sewage. It's something that needs to be figured out.
No rules. No boundaries. Two topics. 30 seconds each. It's time for the 2 minute warning.
I got it all. I was late.
What the fuck is wrong with you?
I don't know. I was still thinking. I answered your question, and all of a sudden, we're live again.
Drew doesn't want to throw up.
Bullshit, he threw me off.
You're dropping gang slices.
I don't know. So if I start doing stuff like that, and I start throwing fingers, I don't know.
There it is.
You know it was going to come out again.
Of course.
All right, what do we got for our 2 minute warning today, Fred?
All right, fellas. The Rock and XFL officially launched their new promotional video showing the new brand and logo. But it was met with some pushback from former WNBA star Sue Bird and her wife, USA Soccer star Megan Rapone. Or is it Rapone?
Rapinoe, whatever.
Right. Over copyrights of Bird's Together logo. Thoughts? Do you think this will hold up?
I mean, anything could happen, I guess, in a situation like that. I've seen it. I would say they're necessarily that similar. Like, they have, like, two lines and togethers in between. Then the X and XFL kind of look similar, and their logo is more like black and white. So was XFL's. I thought it was a stretch. I think it's just trying to make a name for your brand.
Right.
And what could it hurt to maybe send a little cease and desist their way?
It's a little bit of a stretch, and here's what it is. It's also a publicity stunt. Neither of them are in the spotlight anymore right now unless they get involved in situations or, to Fred's point, unless they're talking about dicks on WNBA when they're doing commentary like they did, like the Mannings did. But, yeah, this is a stretch. I get it. The only thing XFL has against it is you use the word together with the logo. You don't do that, it's not a problem.
All right, the number one ranked golfer in the world, Scottie Scheffler, 25 years old, won the Masters and now has 4 straight wins out of the last 6 majors. Is this kid the next big thing and up and coming?
I'd say it feels like it, but I've also you kind of had these situations in the past where you've had like a Jordan Spieth,
Rory.
I was about to look. I couldn't listen to track of his name. Where you thought, oh, okay, well, Tiger's gone, and you know Phil's older. Like this is the guy. But right now, I mean, it looks good. Like the guy like got out to just a hell of a lead and just coasted on Sunday.
So here's the thing that makes him different from any of those guys: the Ricky Fowlers, the Rory McIlroys, yeah. the Jordan Spieths, even to an extent the Dustin Johnsons. None of them won four straight majors out of six.
Yeah,
four straight. This guy is number one in the world, and he fucking proved it this weekend. And he almost, I don't want to say he lost it, but the last hole, the emotions were running so high, like, he missed like 2-3 like, foot putts.
My man's he's got four. He knew he had like five strokes to give up.
It was like a pink tin cup. He's going to give up the last few strokes. But yeah, it was, it's crazy. Yeah,
the kid is super talented.
Super, super talented. It's definitely going to be interesting to continue to watch him go. And as always, we appreciate you guys joining the show. Great show tonight, gentlemen. Good job filling in.
Sorry for any of the coughing that caught on, man. I've had a cough last couple of days, and I felt good for like the last 3 hours before I get here. And then as soon as like we're on broadcast, it's like, oh, God damn it.
It happens.
And producer Fred did a pretty good job over there. Tonight.
A couple things I missed out on.
We'll be all right. We'll get it. James doing a good job over there on the couch, as always. He's holding that couch down. We appreciate you guys tuning in each and every week. Make sure you check us out on our website, www.birdlandbs.com. While you're there, you can check out all of our episodes. You can learn about each of us, contact us. You can check out the latest episode of Shell and Tell, the one the guys put up. Great interview with Ty Felton.
We got another one coming out here in the next couple days.
And you got a connection while we were at the Orioles game,
we
too.
We did, yeah.
Well, hopefully
more
that works out for you.
More to come.
You can also check out all of our gear. Birdland BS gear is how you find it on the website. BigPlay.com and BigPlay app. You can also check us out there. All of our social media sites. I don't know how you're listening to this, if you're watching this live, if you haven't found us on social media, but at BirdlandBS or /BirdlandBS on any of the social media sites, it's the easiest way to find us. While you're there, make sure you like, follow, subscribe, and share. Get it out. Make Birdland BS Nation the best thing in Baltimore. We appreciate all the support you guys provide us each and every week. We're excited. We're going to be getting our draft show up and ready in the next few weeks. Exciting stuff. We're going to do a live show. Probably giveaway again like we did last year. So a lot to be stay tuned for over the next few weeks. And as always, if you want to check out the audio version of the show, you can always check us out on your favorite podcast app. Be sure to give us that 5-star review while you're there. Thanks for tuning in. For Drew, Fred, James, Ryan at home doing taxes, and myself, we'll see you guys next week.
See you.